The 62nd plenary meeting of the General Assembly is called to order. Before proceeding further, I should like to consult members regarding an extension for the work of the second committee. Our members will recall that at its 57th plenary meeting on 25th of November 2013, the General Assembly agreed to extend the work of the second committee until Friday, the 6th of December 2013. However, I have been informed by the chairman of the second committee that the committee requests an additional extension of its work to Wednesday, 11th December 2013, in view that such an extension would facilitate reaching consensus on the pending draft resolutions before it. May I therefore take it that the General Assembly agrees to extend the work of the second committee until Wednesday, 11th December 2013. There being no objections, it is so decided. I shall now invite the attention of the General Assembly to draft decision A/68/L23, circulated under agenda item 69, entitled Promotion and Protection of Human Rights. Here, members will recall that at its second plenary meeting on 20th September 2013, the General Assembly decided to allocate agenda item 69 to the third committee. To enable the General Assembly to take action expeditiously on the document, may I take it that the Assembly wishes to consider agenda item 69 directly in plenary meeting and proceed immediately to its consideration. I see no objections. It is so decided. The General Assembly will now resume its consideration of Agenda 69, Promotion and Protection of Human Rights, to take action on the draft decision entitled Commemoration of the 65th Anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, issued as Document A/68/L23. We shall now proceed to consider Draft Resolution A/68/L23. The Assembly will now take action on Draft Decision A/68/L23, entitled Commemoration of the 65th Anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. May I take it that the Assembly decides to adopt Draft Decision A/68/L23. It is so decided. The General Assembly has thus concluded this stage of its consideration of Agenda Item 69. The General Assembly will now consider Agenda Item 76, entitled Oceans and the Law of the Sea, and its sub-items A and B. Under Agenda Item 76 and its sub-item A, entitled Oceans and the Law of the Sea, the reports of the Secretary General have been circulated in documents A/68/71 and A/68/71/addendum 1. The report of the work of the ad hoc Working Group of the Whole on the regular process for global reporting and assessment of the state of the marine environment, including socio-economic aspects, has been circulated in Document A/68/82. The report on the work of the United Nations open-ended informal consultative process on oceans and the law of the sea at its 14th meeting has been circulated in Document A/68/159. The letters from the co-chairs of the ad hoc open-ended informal working group to the President of the General Assembly has been circulated in Document A/68/399. The Assembly also has before it draft resolution issued as Document A/68/L18. Under sub-item B, entitled Sustainable Fisheries, including through the 1995 Agreement on the Implementation of the Provisions of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea of 10 December 1982, relating to the conservation and management of straddling fish stocks and highly migratory fish stocks and related instruments, the Assembly has before it draft resolution issued as Document A/68/L19. I now have the pleasure to give the floor to the distinguished permanent representative of New Zealand to introduce draft resolution A/68/L19.
Thank you, Mr. President. New Zealand associates itself with the statement shortly to be delivered on behalf of the Pacific Islands Forum by the Republic of the Marshall Islands. And my delegation is also pleased to join many others in co-sponsoring the draft resolution Oceans and the Law of the Sea that is shortly to be introduced by Trinidad and Tobago. And we do particularly compliment Ambassador Eden Charles on his careful stewardship of that draft. Mr. President, New Zealand also had the honour of coordinating the informal consultations on the draft resolution on sustainable fisheries and is pleased now to introduce that text on behalf of all of its sponsors. The draft resolution once again addresses important issues such as the conservation and management of sharks, including the need to implement science-based management measures, the global ban on large-scale pelagic drift net fishing and its implementation through collaborative fisheries enforcement activities, and efforts to assess and mitigate the bycatch of non-target species, particularly through standardising reporting of relevant data. For the first time, Mr. President, this year's draft resolution also recognises the need to tackle the causes of ocean acidification and to implement strategies to maximise its impacts, to minimise its impacts on marine ecosystems. Particular focus has been given to the impact of acidification on the ability of certain organisms to build shells and skeletal structures and the threats that this could pose to food security. Mr. President, a number of key outcomes from other fora, both regional and global, were considered in this draft resolution. For instance, the recent listing of 5 shark species and 2 species of manta ray in Appendix 2 of CITES, and the draft resolution encourages, where appropriate, states to cooperate in establishing non-detriment findings for shared stocks listed in the CITES appendices. The draft resolution also touches on a number of issues relating to illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing, IUU fishing. This reflects the international community's ongoing concern with IUU fishing and its impact on our ability sustainably to manage fish stocks. Coastal states, flag states, port states, and market states all have critical roles to play in the fight against IUU fishing. In this regard, Mr. President, the draft resolution recognises participative surveillance activities in West Africa and efforts to ensure greater transparency in reporting on the activities of charter vessels in regional fisheries management organisations. The draft resolution also calls on states to initiate work within the FAO to elaborate guidelines and relevant criteria relating to catch documentation schemes, including possible formats. Mr. President, the draft resolution continues to recognise the central role of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea and the UN Fish Stocks Agreement in the regulation of international fisheries. The 10th round of informal consultations of states' parties to the Fish Stocks Agreement will be held in April of next year. And the draft resolution notes that this meeting will, among other matters, consider the regional, sub-regional and global implementation of that agreement and initial preparatory work for the resumption of the review conference. That consultation, sir, will be an important step in ensuring that all the foundations are in place for a successful review conference. Mr. President, New Zealand thanks Director Gabriel Gotchi-Wanley and the staff of the Division of Ocean Affairs and the Law of the Sea for their expertise and support in respect of both draft resolutions. And again, we thank Ambassador Eden Charles of Trinidad and Tobago for his expert coordination of the draft resolution on oceans and the law of the sea. I also express my appreciation for the hard work and cooperation of delegations in crafting both draft resolutions. It's our hope, sir, that this constructive and collaborative engagement is maintained as we continue to address the numerous and complex issues that face our oceans and our fisheries.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of New Zealand. I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of Trinidad and Tobago to introduce draft resolution A/68/L18.
Good morning, Mr. President, distinguished delegates. Trinidad and Tobago is honored once again to have coordinated the informal consultations on the draft resolution on oceans and the law of the sea in document A/68/L18. This important exercise, Mr. President, on the agenda of the General Assembly would not have been successful without the support of all delegations who demonstrated tremendous degrees of cooperation and flexibility as they pursued and defended their national interests during two rounds of intensive negotiations. Let me also pay tribute, Mr. President, to the Director and staff of the Division for Ocean Affairs and the Law of the Sea for their excellent stewardship and advice throughout the process. I also wish to commend my colleague, Ms. Alice Revel of New Zealand, who coordinated the negotiations on the other oceans and Law of the Sea resolution relating to sustainable fisheries. Mr. President, the draft resolution before us contains elements necessary in the view of the negotiating delegations for the management, preservation, and sustainable use of the resources of our oceans and seas, as well as guidelines for the conduct of states in discharging the obligations flowing from the international law of the sea, including the 1982 United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. During the negotiations, Mr. President, delegations recognized that oceans, seas, and coastal areas form an integrated and essential component of the Earth's ecosystem and are critical to sustaining it and the international law, as reflected in the Convention, provides a legal framework for the conservation and sustainable use of the oceans and seas and of their resources for their sustainable development. As was the case during the 2012 negotiations, Mr. President, delegations were in agreement that elements of the outcome document of Rio Plus 20, the future we want, should be reflected in the text of the draft. Consequently, the draft resolution contains language on several aspects of that outcome document, including matters relating to the health of our oceans and marine biodiversity, which are negatively affected by marine pollution, including marine debris. Mr. President, the draft resolution, which is 48 pages in length, is comprehensive in character and scope and takes into consideration obligations of states which arise from the Convention, other global agreements, as well as regional undertakings. These include, but are not limited, Mr. President, to the following: the peaceful settlement of disputes, the work of treaty bodies established under the Convention, namely the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, the Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf, and the International Seabed Authority, as well as maritime safety and security, flag state implementation, matters concerning the conservation and sustainable use of marine biological diversity beyond areas of national jurisdiction, to name a few. Each paragraph in the draft resolution was adopted by consensus as delegations ensured that the text provided language which represented no less than their minimum negotiating positions after discussions of the whole, as well as matters which were subject to more intimate examination by small groups appointed by the coordinator. At the same time, Mr. President, delegations agreed that where past practice had to be dispensed with in order to accommodate a particular development, they were prepared to do so based on a particular understanding. This relates to operative paragraph 40 on the number of days for the convening of the meeting of states parties to the Convention on the Law of the Sea in 2014. The paragraph was agreed, Mr. President, on the understanding that 5 days would be allocated to the meeting of states parties in 2014 instead of the practice of allocating more than 5 days in election years. It was further agreed that this would be on an exceptional basis in the light of a number of factors, in particular, the fact that no floating seat will be the object of the elections next year, as well as the need to accommodate all the necessary meetings on oceans and the law of the sea to be held in 2014 within existing resources. Mr. President, each paragraph in the document is important to the object and purpose of the resolution. As coordinator, however, I was very pleased with the efforts made by delegations to agree on language relating to improving the conditions of service of members of the Commission on the limits of the continental shelf, following the establishment of a working group on this subject at the last meeting of states parties, co-chaired by Mr. Thomas Haider of Iceland. I was particularly pleased as well, Mr. President, with agreement on the role of seafood in global food security as a topic for discussion at the 2014 meeting of the open-ended informal consultative process on oceans and the law of the sea, as well as a landmark agreement, in my estimation, on the terms of reference for UN Oceans, an interagency mechanism that seeks to enhance coordination and coherence and effectiveness of the competent United Nations system organizations, as well as the International Seabed Authority. Delegations must also be commended for agreeing to dates for the meetings of the ad hoc open-ended working group to examine questions relating to marine biological diversity beyond areas of national jurisdiction. Mr. President, after 10 days of intensive negotiations of the whole, which also included a series of small groups and bilateral meetings, delegations were able to conclude the draft resolution, which seeks to aid member states as well as other entities in implementing obligations geared towards, among other things, the sustainable use of our oceans and seas. It is my expectation today that the same spirit of cooperation and understanding which characterized the negotiations would be demonstrated by delegations present and the draft under consideration, which is by no means a perfect document, would be adopted by consensus. I thank you very much, sir.
I thank the distinguished representative of Trinidad and Tobago, and I now have the pleasure to give the floor to the distinguished permanent representative of Jamaica.
Mr. President, I have the honor to speak on behalf of the member states of the Caribbean Community, CARICOM, namely Antigua and Barbuda, the Bahamas, Barbados, Belize, Dominica, Grenada, Guyana, Haiti, St. Kitts and Nevis, St. Lucia, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Suriname, Trinidad and Tobago, and my own country, Jamaica. CARICOM continues to attach high importance to our participation in the annual debates in the plenary of the General Assembly on the items related to oceans and law of the sea and sustainable fisheries. In this connection, we greatly appreciate and wish to thank the Secretary General for his reports that provide comprehensive overviews of recent and ongoing developments relating to oceans affairs, law of the sea, and sustainable fisheries. The reports rightly highlight the ongoing need to address all oceans issues as a whole through an integrated, interdisciplinary, and intersectoral approach. In this regard, we particularly welcome the SG's commitment to improving cooperation and coordination at all levels and to continue supporting member states in their efforts to achieve healthy oceans for prosperity. We also take this opportunity to thank the coordinators of the two draft resolutions, Ambassador Eden Charles of Trinidad and Tobago and Ms. Alice Revelle of New Zealand, for their able stewardship of the informal consultations. We also commend the Director and Staff of Division for Ocean Affairs and Law of the Sea for continuing to provide guidance and support to member states in undertaking and implementing matters relating to oceans affairs, the law of the sea, and sustainable fisheries. Mr. President, CARICOM participates in this year's debate against the backdrop of growing concerns about the myriad threats being posed largely by human activity to the world's oceans and seas. CARICOM states are particularly concerned with the damaging impact of climate change and ocean acidification as a consequence of the spike in greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere, leading to coral bleaching, increase in invasive species, and other negative effects which are due to anthropogenic activities. As the global temperature rises and fish stocks dwindle, further threatening livelihoods and food security, it is clear that oceans are now more at risk than ever before. It is for these reasons that CARICOM welcomes and continues to encourage increased activities at the national, regional, and international levels to mitigate the impacts of climate change, with specific focus on the unique and particular vulnerabilities of small island developing states in the management, conservation, and sustainable development of oceans and seas. CARICOM is, therefore, heartened by the outcome of last year's United Nations Conference on Sustainable Development, RIO+20, where the international community demonstrated renewed political will to enable the sustainable use of the oceans and their resources for present and future generations. Looking beyond RIO+20 to the post-2015 development agenda, we must maintain the political momentum and the sustainable use of resources of our oceans and seas must be part of the discourse. Mr. President, the Third International Conference on Small Island Developing States, which will be held in Apia in Samoa, provides a further opportunity for focusing the increased attention of the global community on the oceans and seas, particularly from the unique vantage point of SIDS. CARICOM places tremendous importance on the third SIDS conference. Indeed, on the road to Apia, our regional prep process, culminating with the interregional meeting held in Barbados in August of this year, has laid out our priority areas of focus and actions in addressing oceans and seas. These include protection and preservation of marine biodiversity, management of coral reefs and associated ecosystems, and the strengthening of sustainable and responsible fisheries management mechanisms. In order to achieve our objectives, we request the continued support of the international community for the work of the Caribbean Sea Commission in advancing the designation of the Caribbean Sea as a special area covering sustainable development. Consequently, we wish to express appreciation for the ongoing work of the United Nations Environment Programme, UNEP, and other bodies which have partnered with us over the past year. We particularly welcome the partnership of the UNEP Caribbean Environment Programme, the International Coral Reef Initiative, and other Caribbean counterparts in developing a manual on the control and management of lionfish. At the same time, Mr. President, we acknowledge our own regional efforts at conservation, as demonstrated by the Summit of Caribbean Political and Business Leaders held in May 2013, where the second phase of the Caribbean Challenge Initiative was launched to accelerate marine conservation action in the Caribbean, including the protection of sharks and rays across the region. Mr. President, CARICOM supports the ongoing work of the ad hoc, open-ended, informal working group to study the conservation and sustainable use of marine biodiversity beyond areas of national jurisdiction. We believe that all states must support this initiative that is seeking to develop a global legal regime to ensure that these resources are conserved, managed, and exploited for all states, including small island developing states. In this regard, we welcome the decision which is expected to be adopted today in the draft resolution to task the working group to make recommendations to the Assembly on the scope, parameters, and feasibility of an international instrument under the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. CARICOM will be participating in the meetings of the working group in 2014 with a view to advancing the mandate of the group. Mr. President, as states parties to the Convention, we seek to uphold one of the cardinal obligations founded under the Convention, the protection and preservation of the marine environment. In this regard, we welcome reports that the first global integrated assessment of the state of the marine environment, the World Ocean Assessment, is on schedule to be completed by next year. CARICOM is pleased, therefore, to have appointed experts to participate in this important process. Mr. President, CARICOM participated in the 14th meeting of the Informal Consultative Process on Ocean Affairs and Law of the Sea, ICP, which discussed the impacts of ocean acidification, an emerging issue of particular relevance to small island developing states. These discussions provide a substantial basis for work to move ahead in this area. Next year's topic, the role of seafood in global food security, is particularly timely and relevant to CARICOM, bearing in mind growing concerns over the future of the region's seafood reserves. Mr. President, the question of sustainable fisheries resources continues to engage the CARICOM region. An example of this is the important work being carried out by the CARICOM Regional Fisheries Mechanism, aimed at the sustainable development and management of the region's fisheries sector. By 2014, the region is expected to enhance its contribution to the global management of fisheries resources through the adoption by CARICOM heads of government of the CARICOM Common Fisheries Policy. Nevertheless, Mr. President, there are issues which continue to require the support of all states. In this regard, we must mention that there is still strong concern over the persistence of illegal and unregulated IUU fishing in Caribbean waters, which is threatening the economic and social viability of our fisheries and undermining the effectiveness of conservation management. Mr. President, over the past year, the three institutions created by the Convention continued to cover new ground in carrying out their mandates. With regard to the International Seabed Authority, CARICOM is extremely pleased with the efforts of the authority in discharging its obligations under Part 11 of the Convention. CARICOM welcomes the successful outcome of the 19th session of the authority, which culminated with the approval of two plans of work for exploration for cobalt-rich ferromanganese crusts, the adoption of amendments to the regulations on prospecting and exploration for polymetallic nodules in this area, and the decision on a fixed overhead charge payable annually by contractors to cover the administration and supervision of contracts. The latter decision on cost recovery is timely, given the demand on the authority to administer increasing numbers of contracts, and will contribute to the effective functioning of the authority. With the doubling of contracts for prospecting and exploration, we are witnessing an exciting phase of activity and commend the authority for the steps being taken in the elaboration of an exploitation code. Consequently, we wish to emphasize the need for parties to the convention to attend and participate in the meetings of the authority to ensure the successful completion of its current and future work. Mr. President, Article 82 of the Convention establishes a framework for the authority to distribute to state parties proceeds from those states' parties that have received recommendations from the Commission on the limits of the continental shelf to extend their jurisdiction over the continental shelf beyond 200 nautical miles, and which have exploited the resources of that maritime zone. We commend the authority for its efforts in hosting workshops aimed at giving effect to Article 82 and wish to encourage all member states to support this objective. The International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, ITLOS, must also be commended for its impressive work, and we welcome its increasing activities both in terms of caseload and the number of rulings. CARICOM is pleased that the Tribunal continues to play an active role in capacity building of developing countries through its series of workshops on the settlement of law of the sea related disputes in different regions of the world. In this regard, we have benefited greatly from the latest workshop on the role of the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea in the settlement of disputes relating to the law of the sea in the Caribbean region, held in Mexico City from the 5th to 6th June 2013 in collaboration with the Government of Mexico and the Association of Caribbean States. Mr. President, CARICOM takes this opportunity to reaffirm its support for the work of the Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf. We are encouraged by the important contribution which the Commission continues to make with respect to submissions made by coastal states seeking to extend the limits of the continental shelf beyond 200 nautical miles in accordance with Article 76, paragraph 8 of the Convention. With regard to the increasing workload of the Commission, we welcome strategies that have been adopted to address its considerable workload, including through increasing the number of weeks it is in session per year to 21, as well as the establishment of two new sub-commissions. We also welcome the decision of the 23rd meeting of states parties to establish an open-ended working group on the conditions of service of the Commission. An outcome of the working group's deliberation is for the Secretary General to explore options for the provision of medical insurance for members of the Commission from developing countries, whose participation may be facilitated through the Voluntary Trust Fund. We look forward to receiving the Secretary General's positive findings on this matter that is critical to the effective participation of members from developing countries in the sessions of the Commission. Mr. President, as committed state parties, CARICOM states are cognizant of the challenges to effectively implement the Convention and derive benefits from the overall legal framework governing all aspects of ocean space. We therefore share the observation of the Secretary General's report that, quote, adequate capacity, be it human, technical, or financial, is a fundamental building block for compliance with relevant instruments and to benefit from the oceans and their resources, end quote. In this connection, we express appreciation to the various partners who have contributed technical and financial assistance to CARICOM states over the years. In conclusion, Mr. President, CARICOM is pleased that since the adoption and entry into force of the United Nations Convention of the Law of the Sea, 166 states have become party to this landmark instrument. The steady increase in the number of states parties is encouraging and serves as testimony to the continued relevance and significance of the Convention. As we continue to promote the universal acceptance of this legal framework governing all aspects of ocean space, it is our view that 2014, which marks the 20th anniversary of the entry into force of the Convention and establishment of the International Seabed Authority, provides another opportunity for us to continue the process of public sensitization and awareness, particularly of the young, the future custodians of the common heritage of mankind. I thank you.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Jamaica, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of the European Union.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'm speaking on behalf of the European Union and its member states. Ukraine aligned itself to this statement. Mr. President, once again this year, the EU demonstrated its commitment to the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, as well as to the 1995 Agreement on Straddling Fish Stocks, by actively participating in discussions which led to drawing up the resolutions that have been submitted to the General Assembly today. It is important to highlight that next year will mark the commemoration of the 20th anniversary of the entry into force of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which the EU firmly believes is a factor for stability, peace and progress, and that it holds special importance in a difficult international context. The EU would like to reiterate the importance it attaches to preserving the Convention's integrity and its preeminent role as the legal framework for all oceans issues and ocean-related activities. Mr. President, the European Union welcomed the UNGA Omnibus Resolution, that gives primary importance to the major challenges to the oceans, such as the declining quality of the marine environment and the continued loss of marine biodiversity. The EU always supported the work of ad hoc open-ended informal working group and welcomes the intersessional workshops held in May 2013, which provided valuable scientific and technical expert information. We wish also to highlight the decision taken in line with the recommendation of the working group to establish a preparatory process within the group to address on an urgent basis, building on the work of the ad hoc open-ended informal working group. And before the end of the 69th session of the Assembly, the issue of the conservation and sustainable use of marine biological diversity of areas beyond national jurisdiction, including taking a decision on the development of an international instrument under the Convention. In this context, the EU would like to stress the benefit of the participation of civil society in the work of the working group and welcomes the fact that the role of civil society was endorsed by the Omnibus Resolution. Mr. President, we welcome the fact that the UNGAA Omnibus Resolution recognizes the scale of the challenge and the amount of continuous effort required to combat piracy and armed robbery. In this context, the EU remains committed to combating piracy and undertakes efforts in that regard, in particular in the framework of its operation EU NAVFOR Atalanta. The EU notes with serious concern the increase of the number of attacks against ships in the Gulf of Guinea and supports the measures taken to address this issue. Mr. President, the resolution addresses the concerns raised by the issue of climate change and its effects on the oceans, seas, and natural resources. To respond to the debates within the international community, the resolution equally takes into account various issues relating to such phenomena as oceans eutrophication, acidification, fertilization, CO2 discharge into the atmosphere, and greenhouse gases emissions. The European Union also notes with alarm the growing evidence of the harmful effects of marine litter, especially microplastics, on wildlife and habitats and on marine biodiversity and environment. Marine litter is a growing global environmental issue, as highlighted at the Rio+20 UN Sustainable Development Conference. We strongly support the concerns of the General Assembly regarding the increasing threat from marine litter to human health and safety, ecosystem services, and sustainable livelihoods. One of the gravest threats which our oceans is suffering from and which is caused by anthropogenic emissions of carbon dioxide is ocean acidification, which was tackled at this year's UN informal consultative process. It is already having a negative effect on marine ecosystems, particularly on the organisms having calciferous bodies, such as corals and crustaceans, and can seriously impact food security in the future. The scientific evidence present a unique polos was irrefutable and incontrovertible. Both resolutions which we are adopting today have recognized this. The EU fully supports the call to tackle the causes of ocean acidification, as well as its impacts, and to improve the resilience of marine ecosystems. Mr. President, turning to the Sustainable Fisheries Resolution, the EU continues to view the importance of this resolution for highlighting the most important and topical issues concerning sustainable fisheries. Thus, we are pleased to see that this year, great importance has been given to the fight against illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. The EU considers that this is a global problem which undermines the conservation and sustainable use of marine living resources, and consequently that the elimination of EU fishing plays a vital role in ocean governance. In particular, we are happy to note that the UNGA has recognized the need for the development of international law framework to prevent, deter, and eliminate EU fishing, and particularly with regard to chartering of fishing vessels, participatory surveillance activities, as well as the development of catch document schemes, on which work will soon be initiated in the context of the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations. The EU would like to highlight two conservation issues where, unfortunately, it was not possible to achieve progress this year. The EU remains concerned that the unethical practice of shark finning, whereby a shark's fins are sliced off while the shark is still alive and the rest of its body is thrown back into the sea where it can take days to die, continues to take place. While we appreciate that more states are taking measures to prevent and deter this practice, the EU would have liked to see the UNGA send a stronger message in this regard. The EU was also disappointed that it was not possible to strengthen the language pertaining to marine protected areas for fisheries purposes, which the EU considers to be an important tool for the conservation and sustainable use of marine living resources, and where we are still far away from meeting the agreed target of achieving 10% coverage of the oceans by 2020. Lastly, Mr. President, the European Union would like to express its gratitude to the Secretariat and to the Division for Oceans Affairs and the Law of the Sea for the work done during this year, including the preparation of the annual report on oceans and the law of the sea, as an invaluable compilation of recent developments. We would also like to thank the coordinators of the two resolutions for their unrelenting efforts to reach a consensus, as well as express our appreciation for the excellent cooperation demonstrated by all delegations during the negotiations of both resolutions. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished representative of the European Union, and I now give the floor to the distinguished permanent representative of Norway.
Mr. President, the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea sets forth the legal order for the world's seas and oceans. It provides a solid foundation for a peaceful, responsible, and predictable management of the oceans. All processes related to the oceans must be dealt with within the framework of the law of the sea. An integrated ecosystem-based approach to marine management forms the basis for Norwegian marine policy. Norway applies the precautionary principle and has developed integrated management plans for its seas areas. These plans provide a framework for the sustainable use of natural resources derived from these areas in a way that maintains the biodiversity of the ecosystems. Mr. President, global food security is an important priority for Norway, and oceans are critical in this regard. Healthy marine ecosystems and sustainable and responsible marine management are of vital importance if the oceans are to continue to be a source of human food. It has been agreed that the 15th meeting of the open-ended informal consultative process on oceans and the law of the sea will focus on the role of seafood in global food security. Norway welcomes this. Fisheries, aquaculture, and food security will also be discussed in other forums, such as the UN Committee on World Food Security and the Second International Conference on Nutrition. From a fisheries and aquaculture perspective, it is vital that we seek to sustain healthy marine ecosystems whose living resources can provide food and serve as a source of income for present and future generations. It is widely recognized that healthy, well-functioning, and productive ecosystems will provide optimal levels of production for harvesting. Thus, the fishing and aquaculture sectors are dependent on healthy ecosystems and clean oceans. Mr. President, Norway supports measures to strengthen sustainable fisheries management and actions to protect vulnerable marine ecosystems from destructive fishing practices. The challenge is to find the best way to combine such measures with fishing activities in all fishing countries, including developing countries. The regional fisheries management organizations play a key role in this context, in addition to the responsible coastal and flag states. Mr. President, the fight against illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, IUU, is crucial for safeguarding the world's fish stocks. Combating IUU fishing has been one of the main issues on the international fisheries agenda for the past decade, and we must continue to cooperate on this issue. Norway encourages states to initiate a process within the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO, for the elaboration of a global catch documentation format to support trade in legal fisheries products. A common format will bolster trade in legal fisheries products while at the same time preventing illegal fisheries products from entering the market. As a number of states have developed different and conflicting catch documentation schemes, a common catch documentation scheme would be a valuable tool in the fight against illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Mr. President, Norway also recognizes that there in some instances is a link between illegal fishing and transnational organized crime. It is important that we in the UN and other multilateral forums continue to develop a common understanding of transnational organized fisheries crime, as well as the tools needed to combat this type of crime. The establishment of the Interpol Fisheries Crime Working Group and Project Scale are good examples of the work being done in this area. President, marine biological diversity is essential to all human life. Norway is committed to the protection and sustainable use of marine resources inside as well as outside areas of national jurisdiction. Depending on where the activity takes place, the responsibility for the protection and sustainable use of marine resources rests with the coastal state, the flag state, or the state otherwise responsible for activities outside national jurisdiction. Based on discussions here at the United Nations and elsewhere in recent years, it appears that most member states agree that we need to do more to ensure the protection and sustainable use of marine resources. However, questions have been raised regarding the extent to which the protection of marine biodiversity in areas beyond national jurisdiction can be enhanced within the existing legal framework and the extent to which existing legal instruments sufficiently regulate access to and the sharing of benefits from genetic resources in areas outside national jurisdiction. Norway remains open to negotiating new instruments if this is deemed necessary. The ad hoc open-ended informal working group to study issues relating to the conservation and sustainable use of marine biodiversity beyond areas of national jurisdiction has an important role to play in identifying what is possible within the existing legal framework and any gaps in the framework that may make it necessary to negotiate new instruments. Norway will continue to actively support and participate in this group with a view to contributing to a decision on the possible development of a new international instrument under the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea before the end of the 69th session of the United Nations General Assembly. We encourage all states to share their views on the feasibility, parameters, and scope of a possible new instrument before the next meeting of the working group in March 2014. Mr. President, clear maritime boundaries are essential for identifying which state has rights and obligations in which areas under the law of the sea. This is important in relation to the sustainable exploitation of marine resources and environmental protection. A clear legal framework also promotes peace and security. The establishment of the outer limits of the continental shelf beyond 200 nautical miles is a key element in the implementation of the Convention, and it is necessary to clarify the legal framework for future shelf activities and protection of the marine environment. It also, of course, has important development implications. The Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf makes a significant contribution in this regard. It is therefore crucial that the Secretary General and the Division for Ocean Affairs and the Law of the Sea continue to make every effort to ensure efficient working conditions for the Commission. Mr. President, the establishment of the outer limits of the continental shelf is a complex process for many developing countries that do not have sufficient financial and humanitarian resources. Preparing the necessary submissions to the Commission is a challenge. Norway would like to encourage all states that are able to do so to assist developing countries in the preparation of the documentation for submission to the Commission on the limits of the continental shelf. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Norway, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of the Maldives.
Mr. President, at the outset, I wish to thank the Secretary General for his report contained in document A/68/71 under the theme, The Impact of Ocean Acidification on the Marine Environment. Let me also express our appreciation to the director and dedicated staff members of the Division of Oceans and Law of the Sea for their support to member states on all issues, including this year's negotiations on sustainable fisheries and oceans and law of the sea draft resolutions. My delegation also wishes to record our thanks to Ambassador Eden Charles of Trinidad and Tobago and Ms. Alice Revel of New Zealand for their able guidance as coordinators of respective informal consultations on relevant subjects. Mr. President, the Maldives' economy to a large extent depends on the coastal and marine ecosystem and the biodiversity they harbor. Fishing has been a way of life for generations, and our traditions and practices have been internationally recognized as sustainable. Pole and line fishing is the backbone of our fisheries industry, and this unique fishing method ensures the protection of the marine life. However, the ever-increasing global depletion of this valuable resource is not only a travesty for our environmental concerns, but also for our own economy. The degradation of our ecosystems and the food webs that it sustains our fish stocks are of great concern to my delegation. My delegation, therefore, finds it incomprehensible that 3 years after failing to meet the Convention on Biological Diversity 2010 targets to minimize unsustainable fishing practices and reverse loss of biodiversity, we as an international community are still faltering or even regressing instead of taking the right steps to meet the Aichi Target 6, a target which calls for all fish to be harvested sustainably following an ecosystem-based approach. The blatant neglect of this basic principle has led to massive depletion in shark population and practices that are wholly unsustainable. However, implemented and shark sanctuaries in our territorial waters since 2010, The Maldives has taken initiatives against this trend, has welcomed the addition of 5 sharks and 2 manta ray species on Appendix 2 of the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora this March. Further, we are proud to be a part of the group of countries aiming to introduce stronger language on management of shark fisheries and the prohibition of shark finning during this year's negotiation. There is an increased willingness to address these unsustainable and often unethical practices, even if it is not yet fully manifested in writing. And we hereby express our firm commitment to continue working with our partners to make sure this momentum is not lost. Mr. President, there is newfound momentum on the marine debris debate as well. Marine debris, including plastics, have recently attracted some attention, and we support initiatives to address the environmental impact of marine debris and to change consumption patterns and waste management practices to limit its sources. The Maldives, in particular, is particularly concerned that such transboundary pollutants may thwart the efforts to sustainably manage its marine environment. The Maldives would also like to stress the fact that anthropogenic CO2 emissions drive climate change, leaving in its wake rising sea levels. These emissions, for which Maldives' contribution is negligible, while the potential damage is catastrophic. To make matters worse, these emissions have also led to ocean acidification, hampering the ability of calciferous marine organisms to develop their skeletons. Organisms which include our coral reefs, the foundation upon which our tourism and fisheries industry depend. Our coral reefs are already threatened by coral bleaching. These existential threats to the foundation of the Maldivian economy, to our territorial integrity, and ultimately to our sovereignty are causes of deep concern. It is unfortunate that the political will on reduction of CO2 emissions is still lacking. The danger that nations like the Maldives face is not enough to galvanize concerted efforts by the international community is an absolute parody and will be one of the greatest shortcomings of this century. The Maldives and other SIDS are committed to do our part. We are doing this by reducing dependence and eventually eliminating carbon emissions from our economy. In this vein, Maldives has announced that it will become carbon neutral by 2020. Yet for the accomplishment of this ambitious goal, Maldives will need the cooperation and assistance of our bilateral and multilateral partners. Mr. President, in 2011, Maldives established an entire atoll as a UNESCO biosphere. Since then, the country has scaled up its commitments, announcing transformation of an entire nation into a biosphere reserve. With 19 paragraphs devoted to oceans in the future we want, this announcement could have not been more timely. Yet, we are alarmed that only 1 year later, the political will to honor member states' common commitment to protect, restore the health, productivity, resilience of the oceans and marine ecosystems, to maintain their biodiversity, enabling their conservation and sustainable use for future generations, or even the will to address oceans in the post-2015 development agenda seems to falter. In the Barbados outcome document, SIDS stated clearly that oceans and seas are a thematic priority for SIDS and should be prominently reflected in the post-2015 development agenda, including through consideration of thematic sustainable development goal. For the Maldives, oceans and seas are an integral and indivisible part of development. An agenda that does not take this into fact would be meaningless for us. We recognize that these are challenging times for member states, but the Maldives cannot help but wonder if we, as an international community, can really afford the lack of progress and even the danger of regression in so many of the critical issues of our time. Overfishing, climate change, and sustainable development as a whole. After all, we have only borrowed the world from our children. We should not risk it for short-term gain nor squander a communal bounty. Marine environments have sustained civilizations through generations past and can sustain generations to come. The truth of this will be found in our actions, in our positions, and in our decisions. The truth of this will be found in our legacy. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished representative of the Maldives, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of the Marshall Islands.
Mr. President, Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, I have the honor to speak on behalf of the Pacific Island Forum member states represented here at the UN, namely Australia, the Federated State of Micronesia, Kiribati, Nauru, New Zealand, Palau, Papua New Guinea, Samoa, Solomon Islands, Tonga, Tuvalu, Vanuatu, and my own nation, the Republic of the Marshall Islands. I am pleased to support the adoption of these resolutions on oceans and the law of the sea and sustainable fisheries. Mr. President, in 1967, Ambassador Pardo of Malta, a small island nation, took the floor of the General Assembly to urge serious international action to protect and advance the sustainable development of world's oceans. The existing framework at that time were unable to match up to the future challenges and the global response that followed Malta's call has given us a rich and impressive pattern of international cooperation. But today's call from the Pacific Island Forum is no less urgent than that of 1967. There are serious shortfalls in the environmental health of the world's oceans and the living and non-living resources therein. The world is not yet equipped to respond to the challenges already facing us, let alone those risks facing us all in the coming years. It should be an unquestioned moral and political failure for the world to turn its back on the failing health of nearly three-fourths of our planet's surface. In too many instances, and for too many decades, political commitments on paper has failed to translate into real commitment through action, and in the context of elaborating the post-2015 development agenda, we must avoid these pitfalls. In the view of the Pacific Island Forum members, oceans, seas, and fisheries must be given priority consideration in the elaboration of the UN post-2015 development agenda, and especially within the sustainable development goals discussions. Our forum leaders in establishing the Pacific Oceanscape Initiative strongly emphasized, quote, the critical importance of ensuring the sustainable development, management, and conservation of our oceans, unquote. The Pacific is leading the world with our own commitment and action, but we cannot act in isolation, and we cannot act without partnerships. To my fellow ambassadors within this august body, if you will not join with the Pacific to lead, then please allow. And if you cannot follow, simply do not stand in the way of urgent political progress on oceans and fisheries in the sustainable development context. For the Pacific healthy productive and sustainable oceans represent not only a primary economic pathway for many of our members, but also resources with much wider international benefits. Oceans are ultimately not just SIDS issue, but one which impacts each and every member of the General Assembly. Mr. President, the theme proposed for next year's informal consultative progress meeting, food security and its relation to global oceans, is particularly important to the Pacific. Our small island nations are also large ocean nations. Our fish help to feed the whole world as a valuable source of protein and nutrition. But some of our fish stock stand at the very edge of overexploitation of a rate and scale, which will be threatening the food security not only for our own population, but those of the wider international community. Mr. President, Next year, the nation of Samoa will host an international conference on small island developing states and sustainable development. We welcome the theme, genuine and durable partnerships. And we are especially pleased that the UN Secretary General has already confirmed his attendance. Yet, there is still concern that despite all of the commitment through this resolution before us today, through the UN Love the Sea and UN Fishstock Agreement, and through many of other fora instrument partnership with small island nations on ocean, fisheries, and marine resources may run the risk of being neither durable or nor genuine with respect both to island nations and the resources at hand. Let us use the 2014 Samoa meeting on SIT as a valuable opportunity to correct course where and when it is needed. In this respect, the Pacific Island Forum members emphasized a key call at Rio Plus 20 and repeated in this year's fisheries resolution before us today, wherein, quote, states urge the identification and mainstreaming by 2014 of strategies that further assist developing countries, in particular the least developed countries and small island developing states, in developing their national capacity to conserve, sustainably manage and realize the benefits of sustainable fisheries, including through improved market access for fish product from developing countries, unquote. I sincerely hope that this and many other paragraph highlight calls to assist small island better realize sustainable benefit from ocean and fisheries resources will be far more than empty handshakes. Next year, Samoa's meeting on SIT will be a true litmus test to see where the international community has measured up on our respective commitment and where we may still be falling short. Mr. President, the Pacific Island Forum members welcome new international attention to ocean acidification provided in both the Oceans Omnibus and Fisheries Resolution now before us. We have long stood concerned over these impacts, many of which are already visible, and over a scale of future risk, we strengthen the viability and integrity of our coral reef ecosystems. Indeed, for coral atoll nations, such as my own, the Marshall Islands, ocean acidification poses an unquestioned threat, which, when combined with other climate impact, risks long-term survival. We are pleased that the global community has now committed to tackling the causes of ocean acidification, building marine resilience to its impact, especially the resilience of coral reef, as well as enhancing capacity building and technology transfer, especially for small island developing state. Mr. President, the Pacific Island Forum member welcomed this year's robust debate over the importance of better addressing shark conservation and management and shark finning practices. At least 80 species of shark and rays occur within our region. As around half of these are highly migratory, our shark population is vulnerable to over-exploitation. Indeed, some of our members, including my own nation, have declared and setting in place many of the world's strongest shark protection measures and its largest sanctuary zones. Our Pacific Island Regional Plan of Action on Sharks sets forward strong regional commitment to management arrangement called for within both the International Plan of Action for the Conservation and Management of Sharks and also the Western and Central Pacific Fisheries Commission's conservation measures. We are concerned at the potential gap between UN resolutions and national actions, and we are pleased this year's resolution stressed the true urgency for states to establish science-based management measures for sharks where scientific information is uncertain or inadequate. Pacific Island Forum members recall the decision adopted at Rio Plus 20 to make a decision on whether to commence negotiation of an international instrument under the UN Law of the Sea Convention on the conservation and sustainable use of marine biodiversity beyond national jurisdiction by the end of the UN General Assembly 69 session. Our members remain committed in working towards this deadline. And in this respect, we welcome the fact that the General Assembly has agreed to have two working group meetings in 2014 to discuss the scope, parameters, and feasibility of such instrument. Mr. President, oceans and fisheries are not only some of our nation's most important environmental resources. They are not only some of our region's most important potential economic drivers, and they are not only a wider global resource. But for us in the Pacific, they are the very foundation of our island's identities. Many of our forum leaders are those who remain and remind the General Assembly every September of the increasing urgency of action and the shortfall of political will on oceans and fisheries. It is not my hope, but my firm expectation that our partners will not be silent to this call. Thank you, Komol Dada, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of the Marshall Islands, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of Nauru.
Mr. President, at the outset, let me associate my delegation with the statements delivered by the Marshall Islands on behalf of the Pacific Island Forum. We would also like to thank Ambassador Eden Charles of Trinidad and Tobago and Ms. Alice Revel of New Zealand for their able leadership in bringing these negotiations to a successful conclusion. Oceans and the law of the sea is a critical topic to Nauru. Island nations have a unique dependence on oceans. Marine and coastal resources are vital to our economy, our food security, and our culture. The sustainable use of marine resources is one of our primary tools to eradicate poverty, and we hope to ensure healthy oceans and access to their resources for not only ourselves, but for future generations as well. In order to do that, we will need to better manage and conserve our resources within and beyond national jurisdictions. Mr. President, despite the importance of oceans to us all, we are putting their health at risk. Numerous pressures, such as climate change, overfishing, and habitat destruction, are negatively affecting the health, resiliency, and productivity of the oceans. The combined impacts of climate change, sea level rise, increased sea surface temperature and intensified storm activity, and the adverse effects of ocean acidification caused by increased dissolved carbon dioxide heighten the threats to ocean health. Coral reefs ecosystems are particularly susceptible to climate change and ocean acidification, and may be the first marine ecosystem to collapse without urgent increased mitigation action. Urgent and deep reductions in greenhouse gas emissions are a global imperative. Additionally, given existing levels of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and ocean, building the resilience of vulnerable marine ecosystems to the impacts of climate change and ocean acidification is essential to enabling sustainable development and eradicating poverty. We were pleased, therefore, with the focus placed on this issue at the informal consultative process on oceans and law of the sea, and are gratified by the new text to be adopted, which highlights the need for capacity building and technology transfer to study and minimize the impacts of ocean acidification. We also note the commitment by all to tackle the causes of ocean acidification, a commitment which must be translated into action. After climate change and ocean acidification, overfishing is the next greatest threat to ocean health. We are taking far too many fish and at rates that we know are not sustainable, affecting not only the food source which we depend on, but also negatively affecting whole ecosystems. Continued overfishing and the severe depletion of bycatch stocks, such as sharks, undermine efforts for the management and conservation of oceanic fisheries. We are pleased, therefore, that the strengthened language highlighting the need to address bycatch, including through urgently establishing science-based measures to ensure the long-term sustainable use of sharks, will be adopted. While more needs need to be done, we see this as a step in the right direction. We additionally will need to find a way to reduce overfishing and overcapacity in order to enable new actors to enter. While the international community has long recognized the special requirements of SIDS in fisheries, concrete steps need to be taken to give effect to these words. This includes the need to ensure access to and participation in fisheries. Mr. President, for us in Nauru, we are proud that the biomass of all the highly migratory and straddling tuna fish stocks in the tropical area assessed by the Western Central Pacific Fisheries Commission above the levels capable of producing MSY, and that none of these tropical regional fish stocks require rebuilding, thanks largely to effective cooperation between coastal states in the region. We do, however, have concerns that the biomass of Big Eye tuna might be reduced below MSY levels by 2015 if high levels of fishing continue. And we hope that the collective membership of the WCPFC will follow the lead of the parties to the Nauru Agreement in imposing compulsory limits on the vessels under their jurisdiction, in particular longliners. The nations that are parties to the Nauru Agreement expect to apply an overall effort limit on longline fishing in their combined EEZs, an area of nearly 14 million square kilometers, from January 1st, 2014. Mr. President, one of our biggest problems at the moment is not with the highly migratory and straddling stocks, which we feel are getting under control in the tropical Western Pacific, but with artisanal reef fisheries. The information needs of local fisheries are an order of magnitude more complex than tuna fisheries, and yet in our region, the development devoted to them by the international community are actually in an order of magnitude less. These are national issues and, of course, require national action, but we would ask that in international initiatives and regional agencies not lose sight of the fisheries that are so important to our people at the local level, and that they do not concentrate their efforts exclusively upon the straddling and highly migratory fisheries, where they can get the most recognition or obtain the easiest wins. I am not talking more basic research on reef ecosystems. We have enough reef species lists to last us a lifetime. What we need is more attention to fishing itself, building systems that work at the local level, systems that talk to fishers, that compile hard information on their activities and needs, and that help them to work out socially applicable solutions to any overfishing that is identified. We urge that these considerations be taken under advisement in the work undertaken by our partners and the UN system in the lead-up to the SIDS International Conference and the SIDS International Year. Mr. President, before closing, I wanted to touch on a final topic, the conservation and sustainable use of marine biodiversity beyond areas of national jurisdiction. The creation of a legal regime on biodiversity in areas beyond national jurisdiction via the development of an implementing agreement under UNCLOS is critical to protect the high seas. The high seas are essential to ensure food security and biological diversity, and are also crucial to the economies and livelihoods of small island developing states, including Nauru. We are pleased that the work in this regard is progressing and look forward to engaging on the next steps. Mr. President, in the future we want leaders committed to protect and restore the health and productivity and resilience of ocean and marine ecosystems, enabling their conservation and sustainable use for present and future generations. We believe we have moved in the correct direction with the adoption of the resolutions here today. We look forward to further advancing that work through the eventual adoption of a sustainable development goal on oceans, one with clear targets and goals to ensure we are on the correct trajectory to ensure that oceans can continue to support us. I thank you.
I thank the distinguished representative of Nauru, and then I'll give the floor to the distinguished representative of Iceland.
Mr. President, at the outset, I would like to express Iceland's appreciation for the high standard of assistance provided to member states by the Division for Ocean Affairs and the Law of the Sea. Headed by the new director, Gabriele Götze-Vanli, through preparing reports and all the other activities. I would also like to thank my colleagues, many of which are in this room today, for the excellent cooperation and good spirit during the negotiations of the resolutions on oceans and the law of the sea and on sustainable fisheries. The two coordinators, Ambassador Eden Charles from Trinidad and Tobago and Ms. Alice Revelle from New Zealand, deserve special thanks for their excellent performance. I would furthermore like to recognize the presence here today of the Secretary General of the International Seabed Authority, Ni Odunton, and the President of the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, Shunji Yanai. Mr. President, Iceland continues to be a strong supporter of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which is without doubt one of the biggest achievements in the history of the organization. The Convention, the first and only comprehensive treaty in this field, provides the legal framework for all uses of the oceans, as well as their superadjacent airspace and subjacent seabed and subsoil. Few treaties have contributed so much to peace, security, and the rule of law in the world. It is imperative that the Convention be fully implemented and that its integrity be preserved. We welcome the recent ratifications of the Convention by Timor-Leste and Niger, which bring the total number of states parties to 166, and call on those states that have not yet done so to ratify the Convention in order to fully achieve the goal of universal participation. Mr. President, the three institutions established by the Law of the Sea Convention play a very important role in the implementation of the Convention, and we note with satisfaction that they are all functioning well and are more active in their work than ever before. There is substantial growth in the judicial activities of the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, not only in terms of the number of cases, but also as regards the complexity and variety of matters before the tribunal. The International Seabed Authority has completed the parts of the mining code relating to prospecting and exploration of three categories of mineral resources. The main current challenge of the authority is to develop regulations on the exploitation of these minerals, and probably the potential for such exploitation is higher than ever before. The first set of regulations on the exploitation of polymetallic nodules in the area will presumably be prepared by 2016, taking into account the fact that some contractors are in the final phase of their exploration activities. A high number of plans of work for exploration of mineral resources have been approved by the authority, and in most cases, contracts have been concluded. The Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf has received 69 submissions from coastal states, including Iceland, regarding the establishment of the outer limits of the continental shelf beyond 200 nautical miles, and further submissions are expected in the near future. The Commission has already issued 18 recommendations to coastal states. In light of its heavy workload, we welcome the decision of the Commission to extend the duration of the sessions in New York to 21 weeks annually for 5 years, and to take measures to ensure that 9 subcommissions can consider submissions simultaneously. This should expedite the consideration by the Commission of the long queue of submissions pending. Obviously, the workload of the Commission has implications for the conditions of service of its members. In particular, the long duration of Commission meetings in New York can negatively affect the careers of its members, and a survey has revealed that many members are not provided with the necessary medical coverage while in performance of Commission duties in New York, which is a serious matter. The meeting of states parties to the Convention earlier this year decided to establish an open-ended working group to consider these and other conditions of service of the members of the Commission. And I would like to thank James Waweru of Kenya for co-chairing this working group with me. The working group held 2 meetings this fall, and as a consequence of its deliberations, member states agreed to address the issue in the draft resolution on oceans and the law of the sea. According to the draft resolution, the General Assembly firstly notes the decision to establish the working group and expresses concern about the implications of the workload of the Commission on the conditions of service of its members. Secondly, the Assembly reiterates the obligation of states under the Convention, whose experts are serving on the Commission, to defray the expenses of the experts they have nominated while in performance of Commission duties. In this regard, states are urged to provide medical coverage for the experts they have nominated while in performance of Commission duties. And thirdly, the Assembly requests the Secretary General to explore options for providing medical insurance coverage to members of the Commission from developing countries whose participation may be facilitated through the existing voluntary trust fund while in performance of Commission duties, and to circulate its findings to member states in advance of the meeting of states parties to be held in June next year. I call on states to work together to improve the conditions of service of the members of the Commission. It should be recalled that the recommendations of the Commission carry a particular weight as they form the basis for the establishment of final and binding outer limits of the continental shelf by coastal states. Mr. President, one of the key current issues within the field of oceans and the law of the sea is the conservation and sustainable use of marine biological diversity in areas beyond national jurisdiction, sometimes referred to as BBNJ. This issue is extremely broad in scope, as it includes basically all marine life in the water column beyond the exclusive economic zone and on the seabed beyond the continental shelf. Therefore, before a decision is taken to develop a possible implementing agreement under the Law of the Sea Convention, it is imperative to define the scope of a possible agreement in order to ensure predictability and success. We thus welcome the decision of the General Assembly, according to the draft resolution on oceans and the law of the sea, that the working group hold 2 meetings next year and at least 1 meeting in 2015 to make recommendations to the Assembly on the scope, parameters, and feasibility of an international instrument under the Convention. This will prepare for the decision to be taken before the end of the 69th session of the Assembly on the possible development of such an instrument. In the view of Iceland, if the development of an instrument will indeed be considered feasible, focus should be given to the issue of sharing of benefits from the exploitation of marine genetic resources on the seabed beyond national jurisdiction. The definition in Article 133 of the Convention of resources of the international seabed area only includes mineral resources, and no mention is made of living resources. When the Convention was drafted, such resources were generally not known to exist on the deep seabed, far from any sunlight. However, there has been a huge development in the knowledge of the deep seabed, and today the living marine genetic resources are considered even more valuable than the non-living mineral resources. It is therefore natural that the working group giving focus to this issue. In contrast, care should be taken not to reopen issues that are already subject to a sufficient international legal regime. A good example of such an issue is high seas fisheries, which are subject to the legal regime of the Law of the Sea Convention that was complemented by the 1995 UN Fish Stocks Agreement. That agreement provides the legal framework for the work of regional fisheries management organizations, and the scope of a possible new instrument should therefore not include fisheries. Mr. President, my country played an important role in the evolution of the law of the sea in the 20th century, in particular in the gradual extension of the fisheries zone, which culminated in the 200-mile exclusive economic zone provided for in the Law of the Sea Convention. For the newly independent Iceland, it was critical to gain control over its fishing grounds, which enabled us to combat overexploitation and ensure conservation and sustainable use of our precious fishery resources. Iceland has benefited immensely from the rights provided by the Convention, and this has paved our way from poverty to prosperity and economic independence. Unfortunately, many developing countries, in particular the least developing countries and small island developing states, as well as coastal African states, lack the capacity to benefit fully from the conservation and sustainable use of the oceans and their resources. Obviously, coastal states must be able to have control over their exclusive economic zones and defend them against illegal fishing of vessels from other states. They must also have scientific expertise for giving sound advice on fisheries management. Furthermore, coastal states with a potential for a continental shelf beyond the 200-mile limit must be able to submit scientific information to that effect to the Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf. Capacity building is therefore essential to ensure that developing countries are able to fully implement the Convention and benefit from the rights provided therein. According to the draft resolution on sustainable fisheries, states are encouraged to cooperate closely with a view to enhancing capacity building of developing countries, and in particular small island developing states, in the field of fisheries through education and training. In this regard, the draft resolution recognizes the work of the United Nations University Fisheries Training Program in Iceland that has contributed for 15 years to capacity building in this field in developing countries, graduated 280 fellows from 47 countries, and in addition, held 36 short courses in 12 countries. Clearly, further capacity building initiatives are required in the field of oceans and the law of the sea. However, it is also important to reach out and improve awareness of already existing opportunities. In this regard, I want to draw the attention to the Rhodes Academy of Oceans Law and Policy, which offers annually a prominent and intense 3-week summer course in Rhodes, Greece. The basic objective of the Academy is to promote the rule of law in the world's oceans through education on the provisions of the Law of the Sea Convention and related instruments. The Rhodes Academy is a cooperative undertaking by 6 institutions, including the Law of the Sea Institute of Iceland. In the last 18 years, more than 700 students from more than 130 countries have graduated from the Academy. It is perhaps the clearest sign of the success of the Academy to see how many Rhodes graduates represent their countries regularly at meetings on ocean affairs and the law of the sea here at the United Nations. Mr. President, in discussions on sustainable development goals in the post-2015 development agenda, Iceland will focus on 4 areas: renewable energy, land restoration, gender, and last but not least, oceans. The importance of oceans and seas for sustainable development is obvious and is reiterated once again in the draft resolution on oceans and the law of the sea. In negotiations of possible sustainable development goals relating to the oceans, my country wants to emphasize three issues: sustainable fisheries management, stronger pollution control to keep the oceans healthy, and capacity building. Existing goals and targets that have been developed since world leaders met in Rio de Janeiro in 1992 provide a sound basis in this regard. Accordingly, we should focus our efforts on implementing these already agreed commitments. We are pleased to note the decision contained in the draft resolution on oceans and the law of the sea that the next meeting of the informal consultative process, UNICPOLOS, will focus its discussions on the role of seafood in global food security, where emphasis will be given to the health of the oceans. In light of the significant contribution of fisheries and aquaculture to food security and livelihoods of millions of people, especially in developing countries, this would be a valuable contribution to the negotiations on the post-2015 development agenda. Finally, Mr. President, I would like to highlight the importance of enhanced interagency coordination and cooperation on ocean issues within the United Nations system, and recognize the work undertaken by UN Oceans in this regard. I would like to thank Mr. Gustavo Pereira of Brazil for coordinating the revision by member states of the terms of reference for UN Oceans, which are annexed to the draft resolution on oceans and the law of the sea. The new terms of reference provide that the Division for Ocean Affairs and the Law of the Sea will be the focal point of UN Oceans, and in the view of Iceland, this will strengthen the mechanism. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished representative of Iceland, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of Argentina.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente. Señor presidente, en primer lugar, quisiera agradecer a ambos coordinadores, el embajador Eden Charles de Trinidad y Tobago y a la señora Alice Revel de Nueva Zelanda, por haber conducido las negociaciones de los proyectos que hoy la Asamblea General tiene ante sí. Quisiera asimismo reconocer la presencia en esta Asamblea, como cada año, del secretario general de la Autoridad Internacional de los Fondos Marinos, el señor Nee Oddington, y del presidente del Tribunal Internacional sobre el Derecho del Mar, juez Zunchi Hyanai. Y también deseo felicitar a la señora Gabrielle Goetsche-Vanley por su designación como directora de la DOALOS. Señor presidente, como cada año ante esta Asamblea General, mi delegación reitera que la Convención de las Naciones Unidas sobre el Derecho del Mar es una de las contribuciones más claras al fortalecimiento de la paz, la seguridad, la cooperación y las relaciones de amistad entre las naciones. La Convención constituye uno de los instrumentos internacionales con mayores repercusiones económicas, estratégicas y políticas. El objetivo de los negociadores de la Convención fue el de solucionar todas las cuestiones relativas al derecho del mar en un único instrumento. Sus disposiciones, por tanto, conforman un delicado equilibrio de derechos y obligaciones de los Estados surgido tras 9 años de negociaciones, el que debe ser preservado por todos los Estados en forma individual y como miembros de organismos internacionales con competencia en temas oceánicos u organizaciones de otro tipo. Ese delicado equilibrio debe ser preservado incluso al abordar los nuevos desafíos del derecho del mar en los procesos establecidos en el marco de la Asamblea General, en el abordaje de los temas bajo la competencia específica de organismos especializados reconocidos por la Convención y por cualquier iniciativa del Secretario General o de organismos financieros y por el mecanismo de coordinación que es UN Oceans. La Convención tiene un carácter claramente universal y es aceptada como norma jurídica vinculante, incluso por estados no partes, debido a que constituye en sí misma derecho internacional consuetudinario. La delegación argentina formulará oportunamente una explicación de posición en relación con la resolución sobre la pesca sostenible. Permítame ahora referirme a algunos de los temas tratados tanto en ese proyecto como en el correspondiente a los océanos y el derecho del mar. La cuestión de la biodiversidad fuera de los límites de la jurisdicción nacional es uno de los temas más nuevos del actual derecho del mar. La Asamblea General decidió iniciar un proceso para asegurar el marco jurídico para la conservación y el uso sostenible de la diversidad, biológica marina de las zonas fuera de la jurisdicción nacional, que incluso contemple la posible elaboración de un acuerdo multilateral bajo la Convención de las Naciones Unidas sobre el Derecho del Mar. Es decir, un acuerdo de aplicación de los principios pertinentes de la Convención. El proceso que se desarrollará en el contexto del grupo de trabajo específicamente creado por la Asamblea General abordará la conservación y el uso sostenible de la diversidad biológica marina fuera de las zonas de jurisdicción nacional. En particular, conjuntamente y como un todo, los recursos genéticos marinos, incluida la participación en los beneficios, medidas de conservación, creación de capacidades y transferencias de tecnología. Durante el año 2013 y principios de 2014, el grupo de trabajo se reunirá con el fin de hacer recomendaciones a la Asamblea General sobre la viabilidad, parámetros y ámbito de un instrumento internacional bajo la Convención, con el fin de contribuir a la decisión que la Asamblea General deberá adoptar antes de su 69ª sesión sobre la convocatoria a una conferencia de negociación de un acuerdo de aplicación de la Convención. La Argentina estima que es menester acordar los parámetros y ámbito de un posible futuro acuerdo como paso previo imprescindible antes de convocar a una conferencia de negociación. Respecto del fondo de la cuestión, mi delegación desea reiterar que deberá tenerse debidamente en cuenta que la expresión zonas fuera de la jurisdicción nacional comprende dos espacios marítimos, la alta mar y la zona, y que uno de los propósitos de la Convención fue, y cito, desarrollar los principios incorporados en la Resolución 2749, Romano 25, de 17 de diciembre de 1970, en la cual la Asamblea General de las Naciones Unidas declaró solemnemente, entre otras cosas, que la zona de los fondos marinos y oceánicos y su subsuelo fuera de los límites de la jurisdicción nacional, así como sus recursos, son patrimonio común de la humanidad, cuya exploración y explotación se realizarán en beneficio de toda la humanidad. Fin de cita. En coincidencia con lo manifestado por el Grupo de los 77 y China en sus tres últimas declaraciones ministeriales, ese principio es, para la Argentina, la base de la consideración del tema. Señor Presidente, La Argentina desea reconocer a la Comisión de Límites de la Plataforma Continental por su esforzado y continuado trabajo. Cabe recordar que, siguiendo la decisión de la reunión de Estados Partes, SPLOS/229, la Comisión ha extendido la duración de sus sesiones y las de sus subcomisiones. Con sesiones más extendidas, se plantean algunos desafíos. Uno de ellos es la necesidad de que el secretario general adopte las medidas necesarias y oportunas para asegurar los servicios de secretaría brindados a la comisión y a sus subcomisiones. Otro se refiere con la necesidad de asegurar que los comisionados cuenten con cobertura de salud durante el desempeño de sus funciones. La Argentina reconoce los esfuerzos de Islandia y Kenia en la conducción del grupo de trabajo sobre las condiciones de servicio de la Comisión, apoya las recomendaciones incluidas en el proyecto de resolución y continuará apoyando a la Comisión. Adicionalmente, quisiera recordar una vez más que la labor de la Comisión se relaciona con la traza, es decir, con la demarcación del límite que ya está establecido en el artículo 76, no con los derechos del Estado ribereño, y que en el artículo 77, párrafo 3 de la Convención, se establece, y cito, los derechos del Estado ribereño sobre la plataforma continental son independientes de su ocupación real o ficticia, así como de toda declaración expresa. Fin de la cita. Este recordatorio está reflejado en el párrafo 62 del proyecto de resolución sobre los océanos y el derecho del mar. Señor Presidente, el Tribunal Internacional del Derecho del Mar es la institución judicial independiente creada por la Convención. El Tribunal se abocó desde su establecimiento a 22 casos, todos relativos a distintos aspectos del derecho del mar. Además de destacar la opinión consultiva emitida en 2011 por la Sala de Controversias de los Fondos Marinos sobre las responsabilidades y obligaciones de los estados que patrocinan a personas y entidades con respecto a actividades que se llevan a cabo en la zona, cuya relevancia es reconocida por esta Asamblea, quisiera mencionar el caso número 20, ARA Libertad, que involucrara a mi país, en el que el Tribunal emitió diligentemente una medida provisional para la liberación de la fragata ARA Libertad, un buque de guerra argentino, en el marco de un procedimiento arbitral que concluyó con una solución amistosa con la República de Ghana, de lo que mi país se congratula muy especialmente. La Argentina ha apoyado las labores del Tribunal desde sus inicios y es uno de los 34 Estados partes que ha aceptado la jurisdicción del Tribunal, y es por eso que hoy la Argentina se congratula de que este Tribunal se haya ido consolidando en su jurisprudencia como el Tribunal Especializado en Derecho del Mar que se concibió al negociar la Convención, así como de su contribución a la preservación de la integridad del derecho internacional. En cuanto al mecanismo de coordinación entre secretarías de las organizaciones competentes, UN Oceans, la Argentina apoya los términos de referencia revisados que obran anexos al proyecto de resolución sobre océanos y derecho del mar, y se congratula porque la coordinación de UN Oceans recaiga en la DOALOS. Quisiera asimismo destacar a este respecto el trabajo del señor Gustavo Pereira de Brasil. Señor Presidente, en cuanto al proyecto de resolución sobre la pesca sostenible, mi delegación desea reiterar la necesidad de no apartarse de la regla de toda negociación de derechos del mar, heredada de la negociación de la Convención, de proceder por consenso. En el 65º periodo de sesiones, dicha regla no fue respetada en cuanto a un aspecto del proyecto de resolución sobre la pesca sostenible, y mi delegación debió referirse a ello en su explicación de voto. Quisiéramos recordar que el consenso es la única forma de asegurar la aceptación amplia de las resoluciones de la Asamblea General y por ello debe ser respetado en la negociación de las resoluciones sobre esta materia. En lo que hace a la protección de los ecosistemas marinos vulnerables, en particular a los párrafos 83-87 de la resolución 61/105 y a los párrafos 103-117 y 119-127 de la resolución 64/72 y a los párrafos pertinentes de las resoluciones subsiguientes, cabe recordar que, según el artículo 77 de la Convención, los recursos sedentarios de la plataforma continental están sujetas a los derechos de soberanía de los estados ribereños en la totalidad de la extensión de ese espacio marítimo. Por tanto, la conservación y la administración de tales recursos están bajo la exclusiva potestad de los estados ribereños, los cuales tienen la responsabilidad de adoptar las medidas necesarias respecto de ese recurso y de sus ecosistemas asociados, que puedan verse afectados por las prácticas pesqueras susceptibles de tener un impacto destructivo, incluido el uso de artes de arrastre de fondo en el alta mar. En este sentido, me complace recordar que la Argentina ha adoptado medidas de conservación de recursos sedentarios y de ecosistemas marinos vulnerables en toda la extensión de su plataforma continental. En el párrafo 137 del proyecto de resolución sobre la pesca sostenible, como todos los años, se hace un recordatorio de la exclusividad de los estados, de los derechos del Estado ribereño sobre las zonas de su plataforma continental que se ubican más allá de las 200 millas náuticas. En adición y en consonancia con lo que hemos señalado, en el párrafo 138 toma nota tanto de las medidas de conservación y del esfuerzo desplegado para asegurar su cumplimiento por parte de los estados ribereños en toda la extensión de su plataforma continental. También respecto de la pesca, mi país desea reiterar su preocupación por una tendencia incipiente en que consiste en procurar que, a través de resoluciones de la Asamblea General, se intente legitimar que las organizaciones regionales de ordenación pesquera pretendan adoptar medidas que excedan el ámbito espacial, material y personal de aplicación de esas entidades. La Argentina objeta que las resoluciones de esta Asamblea puedan ser interpretadas en tal sentido, en particular respecto de medidas a través de las cuales esas organizaciones se arroguen cualquier tipo de autoridad respecto de los buques de pabellón de países que no son miembros de dichas organizaciones y que tampoco han consentido medidas de esa naturaleza, dado que ello contraría una de las normas básicas del derecho de los tratados. Finalmente, señor presidente, como cada año, en las oportunidades en que se ha considerado el informe del secretario general sobre los océanos y el derecho del mar y ambos proyectos de resolución, la Argentina desea expresar su reconocimiento a todo el personal de la División de Asuntos Oceánicos y del Derecho del Mar por su profesionalidad, su seriedad y su dedicación, así como por la asistencia que brinda espontáneamente a los Estados miembros en los temas de su competencia. Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
I thank the distinguished representative of Argentina, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of Mexico.
Mr. President, Señor Presidente, ante todo, quiero dejar sentado el aprecio a personas e instituciones que contribuyen con la instrumentación integral y uniforme del régimen jurídico de los océanos, reflejado en la Convención de las Naciones Unidas del Derecho del Mar de 1982. Por otro lado, reconocemos en primer lugar la labor eficaz de los coordinadores de las dos resoluciones que se adoptarán en el marco del tema bajo examen de la Asamblea General. Agradecemos a Alice Revelle de Nueva Zelanda, a cargo del proyecto sobre la pesca sostenible, así como al coordinador del proyecto de la resolución Omnibus sobre los océanos y el derecho del mar, el embajador Eden Charles de Trinidad y Tobago. Por otro lado, nuestro reconocimiento también se extiende al trabajo de gran calidad desplegado por la División de Asuntos Oceánicos y Derecho del Mar, encabezada por Gabriele Wechevanle. De igual manera, deseamos agradecer que el Tribunal Internacional del Derecho del Mar haya promovido la realización exitosa de un taller sobre solución de controversias en el Caribe el pasado mes de junio en la Ciudad de México. El taller se realizó conjuntamente con el Gobierno de México en su carácter de presidente del Consejo de Ministros de la Asociación de Estados del Caribe. Agradecemos cordialmente a la Autoridad Internacional de los Fondos Marinos por llevar a cabo de manera reciente, los días 11 y 12 de noviembre, también en la Ciudad de México, un taller de divulgación sobre la labor de la autoridad y las oportunidades para México en la esfera de la minería submarina de profundidad. Este exitoso ejercicio atrajo los intereses de varios sectores gubernamentales del país, así como a la industria y a centros de investigación de universidades públicas mexicanas. Por otro lado, valoramos la iniciativa de Noruega para que en la 15ª reunión del proceso consultivo se examine el tema el papel de los alimentos marinos en la seguridad alimentaria mundial. Sin duda, ello es una gran oportunidad para que los copresidentes del proceso consultivo incluyan la atención a cuestiones de suma importancia como el papel de la acuacultura, además de consideraciones socioeconómicas al confeccionar la temática de la reunión. Estimamos que esta coyuntura debería evitar repetir temas ya examinados en reuniones pasadas del proceso consultivo, como la pesca ilícita, no declarada y no reglamentada, así como el tema de la pesca y su contribución al desarrollo sostenible, vistos respectivamente en la 1ª y 5ª reuniones. De igual manera, apreciamos el entendimiento pactado en el marco de las negociaciones del proyecto de resolución Omnibus referente a la duración excepcional de 5 días de la próxima reunión de Estados parte de la Convención, a pesar de que habrá elecciones de jueces para el Tribunal Internacional del Derecho del Mar. Ya es una práctica que, en presencia de elecciones para el Tribunal o la Comisión de Límites de la Plataforma Continental, la reunión de Estados partes abarca más de 5 días a fin de contar con el tiempo necesario para estos procesos. En este contexto y en atención al número de reuniones sobre océanos que albergará esta sede durante 2014, las fechas previstas en el cuerpo del proyecto de resolución Omnibus son excepcionales y no deben ser consideradas como precedente para reuniones de los Estados partes subsecuentes en las que haya elecciones. Señor Presidente, me refiero ahora a 3 puntos concretos reflejados en el proyecto de resolución Omnibus, los cuales en su conjunto dan cuenta de la relevancia de la dimensión de la utilización sostenible de los océanos en el marco de la instrumentación de la Convención. Primero, mi delegación observa que el examen del asunto de la acidificación de los océanos en el ámbito de la última reunión del proceso consultivo fue a todas luces oportuno ante la dimensión del problema. El proyecto de resolución contiene varias referencias a dicha cuestión. Su inclusión fue producto del trabajo de un nutrido grupo de delegaciones a quienes expresamos nuestro más profundo y sincero aprecio. Nuestra aspiración es que el nivel de atención al problema escale en la ya de por sí muy amplia lista de temas urgentes vinculados con el entorno marino. Segundo, vemos con agrado que el proyecto de resolución invita a la Autoridad Internacional de los Fondos Marinos a considerar el desarrollo de planes de ordenación ambiental adicionales al ya adoptado en relación con la zona de la fractura Clarion-Clipperton. En ese sentido, es importante que la autoridad considere soluciones semejantes para las zonas en las que ya hay contratos de exploración en el Océano Índico, el Océano Atlántico y próximamente en el Océano Pacífico Occidental. Señor presidente, en cuanto a mi tercer y último punto, estimamos conveniente advertir que tanto en el texto del proyecto como en el cuerpo de las resoluciones adoptadas en la materia, durante periodos pasados de sesiones, se dota de suma importancia al desarrollo sostenible de los océanos y mares, sumado al papel de la Convención en ese ámbito, al observar en esta última el marco jurídico en el que se llevan a cabo todas las actividades marinas. En ese sentido, es necesario observar que la resolución anual de la Asamblea General sobre Océanos y Derecho del Mar incorpora en su justa dimensión el tema del desarrollo sostenible de los espacios oceánicos que abarcan más del 70% de la superficie del planeta. En vista de que la resolución anual sobre océanos de la Asamblea General articula esa lógica y que la misma resolución es la vía idónea para fomentar acciones en la materia, el párrafo preambular incorporado en el proyecto de resolución del presente periodo de sesiones, que toma nota de que en febrero de 2014, el Grupo de Trabajo de Composición Abierta sobre los Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible examinará, entre otros temas, el de los océanos, debe ser interpretado como una referencia neutral a dicho proceso que no prejuzga en ningún sentido el resultado de esa reunión. México toma nota de las posiciones divergentes de los Estados miembros, en particular y de modo implícito, la referente al establecimiento de objetivos de desarrollo sostenible en océanos, ante el riesgo que podría representar para el carácter unificado de la Convención y para evitar prejuzgar otros procesos de la Asamblea en curso, como el relativo a la biodiversidad marina, más allá de la jurisdicción nacional. Señor presidente, en ese sentido, la instrumentación uniforme del régimen jurídico del mar reflejado en la Convención y el seguimiento de las recomendaciones plasmadas a lo largo de la resolución deben continuar como el eje de los esfuerzos de la comunidad internacional en la consecución del desarrollo sostenible de los océanos. Señor presidente, me refiero ahora al tema de pesca sostenible. México mantiene su compromiso de promover el aprovechamiento sostenible y la conservación a largo plazo de los recursos marinos en el marco de las instancias pesqueras de la que es parte. México, en ese sentido, México gestiona sus pesquerías con arreglo a lo preceptuado por el Código de Conducta para la Pesca Responsable y de manera prioritaria y fundamental pone especial atención en promover la selectividad de las artes de pesca para reducir al mínimo los descartes, la captura de organismos juveniles y de las especies no objetivo de la pesca, así como evitar las capturas de especies asociadas. En ese sentido, y considerando la situación de ciertas poblaciones de especies altamente migratorias en determinadas zonas marinas de alta mar, México es un activo promotor de medidas dirigidas a la contabilización, mercado, numeración y monitoreo de los dispositivos agregadores de peces, como arte de pesca de reducida selectividad e impacto negativo en los ecosistemas marinos, y de la cual se establecieron por primera vez reglas para su uso y control en el marco de la 85 reunión de la Comisión Internacional del Atún Tropical, celebrada en junio pasado en México. Respecto a los tiburones, México reafirma su disposición y compromiso en favor de la conservación y aprovechamiento sustentable de los recursos naturales y comparte la preocupación que este tema ha generado, así como la necesidad de tomar en cuenta los impactos socioeconómicos en las poblaciones afectadas. México ha establecido un adecuado marco normativo para el manejo y conservación de sus poblaciones de tiburones, incluyendo una prohibición de su pesca durante el período de mayor intensidad reproductiva de las principales especies y la prohibición del aprovechamiento exclusivo de aletas. Aunado a estas realidades, las flotas mayores dirigidas a estas especies han estado sujetas a programas de observadores y monitoreo, lo cual garantiza el pleno cumplimiento de dicha normatividad. Por último, reconocemos los esfuerzos que a nivel internacional se han realizado en los organismos internacionales, particularmente las organizaciones regionales de ordenación pesqueras, como la Comisión Interamericana del Atún Tropical, la Comisión Internacional para el Atún Atlántico y la Comisión Pesquera del Pacífico Central y Occidental, entre otros. Reconocemos que dichas instituciones son los organismos idóneos para promover medidas de conservación y protección de los recursos marinos, y que han tenido avances exitosos que permitirán la sustentabilidad en este tema para generaciones futuras. Muchas gracias.
I thank the distinguished representative of Mexico, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of Ukraine.
Mr. President, I would like to thank the Secretary General for the wide-ranging elements of his reports on oceans and the law of the sea, and have the honor to be a sponsor of both draft resolutions. Our appreciation also goes to Dualos for its valuable stewardship during the informal consultations on the draft resolutions before us today, and also to the coordinators of the both documents. Aligning itself with a statement by the European Union, Ukraine would like to intervene in its national capacity. Mr. President, Ukraine has been consistently committed to the 1982 United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, a comprehensive legal framework covering all aspects of the activities in the oceans and the seas. My delegation has actively participated in the consultations and is very grateful to all delegations for their cooperation and support. Ukraine is very pleased that its initiatives aimed at reinforcing cooperation between member states and relevant international bodies in developing national legislation on piracy have been supported in the course of the consultations and reflected in the draft omnibus resolution. We strongly believe that the fight against piracy cannot bring sustainable results without fighting impunity and bringing to justice perpetrators of acts of piracy, as well as their organizers and facilitators on land. Current statistic in this respect is very encouraging. More than 1,200 individuals suspected on piracy are prosecuted or being awaiting prosecution in more than 20 states. We welcome the ongoing cooperation within the United Nations in this field and look forward to working closely with interested member states and competent international institutions in further developing national legislation against piracy and strengthening mechanisms of bringing pirates, hijackers, and their sponsors to justice. Mr. President, needless to say that today's significant 37% decrease in the number of attacks by pirates and armed robbers worldwide, especially in the South China Sea, the Indian Ocean, and in South America, emanates from national and multilateral initiatives, as well as regional mechanisms of cooperation in combating and preventing piracy and armed robbery at sea. However, the current decline in trend in the number of attacks is reversible and predominantly dependent on the international naval patrol. In this regard, Ukraine is proud that its frigate Hetman Sahai Dachny, a flagship of the Ukrainian naval forces, equipped with a deck helicopter, is now policing the waters of the Horn of Africa as a part of NATO Operation Ocean Shield. New challenges to maritime safety and security are emerging, and a lot of work is still ahead of us. We express our particular concern about the growing trend in attacks against ships in West Africa, in the Malacca Strait, and in the Mediterranean Sea, reported by the Secretary General recently. According to his report, the majority of the attacks worldwide occurred or was attempted in port areas. Ukraine urges coastal states, flag states, and industry to make everything possible to ensure safety and security of maritime shipping, especially in the listed regions. We welcome the discussions on the initiatives regarding the use of privately armed, privately contracted armed security personnel on board commercial vessels, including initiatives by IMO, the United Nations Interregional Criminal Research Institute, the International Standards Organization, and Working Group 2 of the Contact Group on Piracy off the Coast of Somalia. Lastly, Mr. President, along with eliminating routes of piracy on land and suppressing its manifestations at sea, measures taken by the international community in this field should also include addressing the impacts of piracy, especially as regards to its victims. As one of the major states of seafarers' origin, Ukraine is actively engaged in the cooperation between member states, IMO, ILO, and other actors aimed at developing measures to protect the welfare of seafarers who are victims of pirates, including their post-incident treatment and reintegration in a society. We highly appreciate the work carried out in this field and stand ready to do our utmost to protect interests of the seafarers. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished representative of Ukraine, and I now give the floor to the distinguished permanent representative of Monaco.
Monsieur le Président, permettez-moi en préambule de remercier l'ancien directeur de la Division des Affaires maritimes et du droit de la mer, Monsieur Sergei Tarasenko, et de féliciter Gabrielle Gotch-Wanli, la nouvelle directrice de Doualos, pour sa nomination à la tête d'une division qu'elle connaît bien, pour y avoir consacré une grande partie de sa carrière de fonctionnaire international. Monaco estime qu'il est extrêmement important pour les États membres de pouvoir compter sur le professionnalisme et le dévouement d'une équipe soudée et dynamique qui permet au secrétaire général de remplir ses obligations de dépositaire de l'instrument juridique central pour les océans et les mers qu'est la Convention. En remerciant le secrétaire général pour ses multiples rapports, je souhaite également saluer le leadership des coprésidents du processus consultatif informel ouvert à tous sur les océans et le droit de la mer et de ceux du groupe de travail sur la biodiversité marine dans les zones situées au-delà de la juridiction nationale, ainsi que les facilitateurs des deux projets de résolution que Monaco coparraine. Je salue la présence parmi nous du secrétaire général de l'Autorité internationale des fonds marins, M. Odunton, et du président du Tribunal international du droit de la mer, M. Shunzi Yanai. Monsieur le Président, ma délégation se félicite que les travaux que nous avons menés lors des mois écoulés dans le domaine des océans et du droit de la mer aient été productifs. La 14e session du processus consultatif qui a consacré ses travaux aux effets de l'acidification des océans sur le milieu marin a été très importante au moment où l'acidification des océans atteint des niveaux inédits depuis 30 millions d'années et menace désormais tous les aspects de la vie sous-marine. L'aquaculture industrielle et la faune naturelle pâtissent déjà de l'acidification des océans. Les effets possibles de l'acidification sur l'absorption du son auraient également des conséquences néfastes sur la reproduction des mammifères marins. Ce phénomène menace gravement les petits États insulaires en développement et les États côtiers en développement et risque d'anéantir tous les efforts de développement durable, car des mesures en matière d'atténuation des effets et d'adaptation aux changements dus à l'acidification s'ajoutent à celles relatives à la montée des eaux et aux phénomènes climatiques extrêmes, conséquences du changement climatique. Aussi est-il important que l'Assemblée générale rappelle l'importance des dispositions de la Convention relatives à la recherche scientifique marine et au transfert de la technologie en la matière. Monaco s'est engagé depuis de nombreuses années dans ce domaine et continuera de soutenir la recherche scientifique marine. Le Centre de coordination internationale sur l'acidification des océans, créé l'an passé au sein des laboratoires de l'environnement de l'AIEA, est appelé à se développer et à coopérer avec d'autres institutions afin de contribuer au développement des connaissances qui seules nous permettront d'adopter une stratégie prenant en compte les dimensions sociales, économiques et environnementales de l'acidification des océans. Monsieur le Président, les travaux intersessions et ceux de la réunion du groupe de travail sur la biodiversité marine au-delà de la juridiction nationale ont également permis des avancées en matière de compréhension des enjeux et des difficultés d'un sujet essentiel pour l'approche intégrée de la conservation et de l'exploitation durable de la biodiversité marine. Conformément à la résolution que nous allons adopter, dès l'an prochain, nous allons nous attacher à l'examen concret de la portée, des paramètres et de la faisabilité d'un instrument international de mise en œuvre relevant de la Convention des Nations Unies sur le droit de la mer. Je voudrais souligner brièvement trois autres sujets du projet de résolution Omnibus. En premier lieu, nous relevons que le trafic des ressources naturelles s'est intensifié et constitue l'une des menaces les plus graves qui pèsent sur le développement des pays les moins avancés. Le caractère transnational de ces activités illégales et l'existence de liens avec des réseaux criminels organisés nécessitent un renforcement accru de la coopération internationale. Nous nous félicitons donc du projet SCALE d'Interpol contre la pêche illégale qui, bien que récent, a déjà remporté des succès importants ainsi que des mécanismes mis en place par l'Union européenne entrés en vigueur au 1er janvier 2010. Le projet que nous considérons aujourd'hui consacre d'autre part de nombreux paragraphes à la piraterie et à la criminalité transnationale organisée, y compris le trafic d'êtres humains qui sévissent dans nombreuses régions du monde et au-delà des violations des droits de l'homme, mettent en danger le trafic maritime, la sécurité des équipages et affectent le tourisme, pour ne citer que quelques conséquences de ces fléaux. Ma délégation prête la plus grande attention à ces questions et assure les organes et institutions concernés de son soutien. Nous exprimons enfin notre satisfaction quant au nouveau mandat et terme de référence que l'Assemblée générale s'apprête à approuver pour ONU Océan. Les différentes entités qui composent ONU Océan ont toute notre confiance. Monaco considère que la coopération de tous les partenaires et la coordination de leurs activités respectives en fonction de leur mandat sont des éléments essentiels pour la mise en œuvre des politiques décidées par les États membres. Monsieur le Président, le projet de résolution Omnibus fait de nombreuses références aux documents que nos chefs d'État et de gouvernement ont adoptés lors de la conférence des Nations Unies sur le développement durable en 2012. Ceci est d'autant plus pertinent que les questions relatives aux océans et aux mers sont essentielles dans la définition du cadre de mise en œuvre du futur que nous voulons et de l'agenda de développement de l'après-2015. Permettez-moi de rappeler ici l'appel lancé par Son Altesse Sérénissime le Prince Albert II en septembre dernier dans le cadre du débat général. Et je cite « Conformément au message de Monaco adopté en novembre 2011 et fort de l'importance reconnue aux océans dans le futur que nous voulons, je m'engage à nouveau à promouvoir le rôle des océans dans la définition du programme pour l'après-2015 et à réitérer mon soutien en faveur d'un objectif de développement durable consacré aux océans. Régulation du climat, sécurité alimentaire et nutritionnelle, énergie, tourisme, transport et commerce international, tous les domaines qu'affectent directement ou indirectement les océans ont trait aux trois piliers du développement durable. Je pense indispensable de réaffirmer également l'aspect fondamental qu'ils revêtent pour le monde et les risques que font peser sur eux les activités humaines excessives qui contribuent entre autres à leur acidification et à la réduction accélérée des ressources qu'ils renferment. » Fin de citation. Les questions relatives aux océans et aux mers sont examinées chaque année en séance plénière, comme aujourd'hui de l'Assemblée générale. La définition d'objectifs de développement durable entre également dans le mandat de l'Assemblée générale. Il ne saurait donc y avoir contradiction entre ces mandats, mais au contraire, convergence. Je me permets également d'insister sur l'importance donnée par la Convention des Nations Unies sur le droit de la mer aux États sans littoral. Ceci mérite d'être souligné, car loin de favoriser les États côtiers, un objectif de développement durable sur les océans reconnaîtrait le rôle prépondérant d'océans sains et productifs pour l'ensemble des États, qu'ils soient insulaires, côtiers ou enclavés. Le lien intrinsèque qui existe entre la vie sur Terre et la vie au sein des océans et des mers nous oblige, si nous souhaitons vraiment adopter un cadre de développement durable, inclusif pour les générations futures, à définir un ODD sur les océans et les mers. Il ne s'agit donc pas de modifier le mandat des différentes institutions et organes de convention qui interviennent dans les différents secteurs de conservation et de gestion, ni de s'immiscer dans l'exécution des programmes. Un ODD permettrait en revanche une mobilisation politique accrue sur les priorités les plus urgentes. À titre d'exemple, le message de Monaco adopté en novembre 2011 envisageait trois axes de développement durable pour les océans, la sécurité alimentaire, l'énergie et le tourisme durable. S'agissant du secteur de l'énergie, Monaco est précurseur de la technologie des pompes à chaleur aux deux mers et s'est engagé depuis 2011 dans un projet qui s'appelle OptimaPAC, labellisé pôle de compétitivité mer Méditerranée, qui vise à structurer une vraie filière industrielle de l'énergie thermique marine. Monaco dispose de quelque 70 pompes sur son littoral qui produisent entre 15 et 20% de l'énergie consommée sur son territoire. En s'appuyant sur ces sites, le projet regroupe des laboratoires de recherche universitaire en océanologie et des industriels réunis dans un consortium de savoir-faire et de compétences qui mobilise chercheurs et ingénieurs. Une autre priorité pour Monaco est le développement d'aires marines protégées. Monaco a participé au 3e congrès mondial des aires marines protégées, IMPAC 3, qui s'est déroulé du 21 au 28 octobre dernier dans deux villes emblématiques françaises de la Méditerranée que sont Marseille et Ajaccio. Co-organisé par l'Agence française des aires marines protégées et l'Union internationale pour la conservation de la nature, ce congrès, qui se réunit tous les 4 ans, a rassemblé près de 1500 participants, scientifiques, gestionnaires, élus et organisations non gouvernementales de 87 nations à travers le monde. Monsieur le Président, Monaco s'est engagé aux côtés de la communauté internationale à redoubler d'efforts pour la mise en œuvre des objectifs du millénaire pour le développement à l'échéance 2015. Le cadre de développement post-2015 et la définition d'ODD devront, conformément à l'engagement pris en 2012 à Rio plus 20, donner aux océans et aux mers la place prépondérante qu'ils occupent pour la survie de notre planète et la durabilité de la vie sur Terre. Je vous remercie.
I thank the distinguished permanent representative of Monaco, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of Japan.
Mr. President, let me first join the other delegates in thanking the coordinators of the two draft resolutions, Ambassador Eden Charles, Deputy Permanent Representative of Trinidad Tobago, and Ms. Alice Revelle of New Zealand for their tremendous work. I also wish to thank all member states who have worked together in a spirit of cooperation during the informal consultation on the resolutions. My appreciation also goes to the Secretariat for its assistance. Mr. President, with regards to Agenda Item 76A, quote, Oceans and the Laws of the Sea, unquote, we'd like to point out that Japan is a maritime state surrounded by water and dependent on maritime transport for nearly all imports of energy resources, including oil and mineral resources. To advance the rule of law in the oceans, commons for the international community as a whole, compliance with international law, including the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, is extremely important. The convention prescribes principles such as safety at sea, freedom of the high seas comprising freedom of navigation and freedom of overflight, and peaceful settlement of disputes. The adoption of this draft resolution, which contains the aforesaid principles as the consensual will of the member states, is also very important for maritime states like Japan and for the international community. In this regard, Japan is pleased to co-sponsor the draft resolution in the oceans and the law of the sea. Japan would also like to take this opportunity to welcome the accession of the convention by the Democratic Republic of Timor-Leste and the Republic of Niger. Mr. President, with regards to the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, ITLOS, Japan highly appreciates the important role played by the tribunal in terms of the peaceful settlement of disputes, as well as the maintenance and development of the rule of law in the oceans. While cases have been continually submitted to the tribunal, Japan welcomes that the tribunal's work covers various fields and it has further increased its number of achievements, including the response to the request for an advisory opinion from the Sub-Regional Fishery Commission, the issuance of a judgment in the M/V Riza case, and the prompt deliveries of orders in response to requests on provisional measures in a number of cases. Japan, as the largest contributor to the tribunal's budget, is committed to continuing its full support for the valuable work of the tribunal. For the further development of the tribunal's activities, Japan considers one of the most important elements the election of persons of competence. From this viewpoint, Japan decided to re-nominate President Shunji Inai of the tribunal as a candidate for the election of members of the tribunal, which is to be held in June 2014. President Inai has been a member of the tribunal since 2005 and also has been president of the tribunal since 2011. With regards to the International Seabed Authority, ISA, Japan welcomed the approval of a plan of work for the exploration of cobalt-rich ferromanganese crust by Japan Oil, Gas and Metal National Corporation by the Council during the 19th session of the authority in July of this year. Since its establishment, Japan has attached importance to the role to be played by the authority for the international management of exploration and exploitation of mineral resources in the area known as the Common Heritage of Mankind. Japan highly appreciates that the authority has steadily carried out its mission to establish maritime legal order in the area, including the amendments to the regulations on prospecting and exploration to polymetallic nodules in the area. In view of the importance of ensuring a well-balanced approach between exploration and environmental protection of the area, Japan highly values the authority's activities on these issues by adoption of the guidance for contractors for the assessment of the possible environmental impacts arising from exploration of marine minerals in the area and the workshops organized by the authority. Japan has been supporting activities undertaken by the authority through both human and financial resources, including its contribution to the voluntary trust fund of the International Seabed Authority in the amount of $44,760 this year. Japan would like to express its intention to continue its support for the authority in various fields. With regards to the Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf, Japan wishes to pay tribute to the Commission for its tremendous efforts in expediting its consideration of the numerous submissions with such measures as an extension in the duration of the Commission's sessions and the additional establishment of new subcommissions. Bearing in mind the important role of the Commission under the Convention, Japan has provided human contribution to the Commission by nominating a member of the Commission, and also this year, Japan made additional contribution of $352,100 to the trust fund for the purpose of defraying the costs of participation by members of the CELACs from the developing states in the meetings of the Commission. Japan firmly believes that through voluntary contributions to the trust funds by state parties, the smooth and expeditious consideration of the submission by the Commission will be promoted. Regarding maritime safety and security issues, we can say that although we witnessed a marked reduction in the volume of pirate attacks off the coast of Somalia and in the Gulf of Aden, the situation has remained unpredictable. To suppress piracy, Japan is of the view that a multi-layered approach, which includes assistance to enhancing maritime law enforcement capacity in Somalia and its neighboring countries, and as a medium to long-term efforts for stability in Somalia, in addition to operation by naval vessels, must be pursued. From this point of view, Japan has been deploying destroyers and patrol aircraft to the region since 2009. In addition, Japan has contributed to enhancing maritime law enforcement capacity, including through the disbursement of $14.6 million to the IMO Djibouti Code Trust Fund. Further, Japan has contributed $3.5 million to the Trust Fund to support the initiative of states countering piracy off the coast of Somalia. Japan also continues to play a leading role within the framework of the Regional Cooperation Agreement on Combating Piracy and Armed Robbery Against Ships in Asia. Mr. President, with regards to the agenda item 75B, sustainable fisheries, as a responsible fishing state and a state party to UNCLOS and UN Fish Stocks Agreement, Japan is dedicated to addressing the promotion of sustainable use through the conservation and management of maritime living resources and the appropriate conservation of maritime ecosystem. In cooperation with the parties concerned through bilateral fisheries agreements, FAO and regional fisheries management organizations. Japan welcomes recent developments in the management of high seas bottom fishing, including the conclusion of arrangements concerning the establishment of new RFMOs, which reflects past resolutions on sustainable fisheries, especially ones adopted in 2006 and 2009. Japan will further promote the management of high seas bottom fishing through efforts for making these arrangements entry into force at the earliest stage in cooperation with other parties and related organizations. Before concluding, Mr. President, Japan reiterates its wish that the two draft resolutions before us, which are the results of intensive negotiations among the member states, who worked with the spirit of cooperation during the informal consultations, will be duly adopted at this session of the General Assembly. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished representative of Japan, and I now give the floor to the distinguished representative of the Philippines.
Thank you, Mr. President. At the outset, we thank Ambassador Eden Charles of Trinidad and Tobago and Ms. Alice Rebel of New Zealand for their hard work, commitment, and dedication in coordinating our annual resolutions on oceans and the law of the sea and on sustainable fisheries, respectively. At the combined 84 pages, the two resolutions taken together are easily the most comprehensive subject that we consider on an annual basis. But that would not be surprising if you remember, first, that water covers two-thirds of the planet's surface, and second, that half of the planet's surface is high seas beyond the jurisdiction of any state. Sustained global cooperation in ocean matters is paramount. Every day, the UN, its relevant specialized agencies, other international and regional governmental organizations, and of course our own capitals, discuss and take critical decisions on ocean matters. The gamut is endless, from sustainable fisheries, the preservation of marine biodiversity, the delimitation of the continental shelf, the exploration and exploitation of minerals in the deep seabed, shipping, marine pollution, ocean acidification and climate change, scientific research, capacity building, and the settlements of disputes concerning rights and obligations arising out of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. Last year, we commemorated the 30th anniversary of the opening for signature of UNCLOS in Montego Bay, Jamaica. The UNCLOS, our constitution for the oceans, seeks to ensure global and regional peace, the rule of law, cooperation and stability in the just and sustainable use of marine natural resources. Mr. President, our resolution on oceans and the law of the sea builds on previous year's resolutions and contributes to the rules-based international regime. It articulates our deepening concern over the continued threat posed by human activity on marine environments and biodiversity. It once more reflects the key elements of the outcome document, The Future We Want, from Rio plus 20 last year. The Rio conference recognized that oceans, seas, and coastal areas form an integrated and essential component of the planet's ecosystem and are thus critical to sustaining it. Most importantly for coastal developing countries and small land states, the resolution also recognizes the importance of improving our understanding of the impact of climate change on oceans and seas. In this regard, let me reiterate the Philippines' deepest gratitude to the Secretary General and the entire HIRM at headquarters and on the field, and to all member states and international civil society for your sustained outpouring of generosity, concern, and support for our people since the unprecedented tragedy wrought by Typhoon Haiyan exactly 1 month ago in the Philippines. Thank you very much. We shall never forget. Mr. President, now more than ever, we must take action to arrest marine pollution, including marine debris, which compromises the health of the oceans and of marine diversity. We also need to reverse the adverse economic, social, and environmental impacts of the physical alteration and destruction of marine habitats that might result from land-based and coastal development activities. In this vein, the Manila Declaration on Furthering the Implementation of the Global Program of Action for the Protection of the Marine Environment from Land-Based Activities, as referenced in paragraph 174 of the resolution, points to us the way. Next year will be another important year. In spring, we look forward to the first draft of the regular process global report and assessment of the state of the marine environment, including socioeconomic aspects. We thank Portugal, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and Argentina for their expert leadership of the ad hoc working group of the whole. We also look forward to the 3 meetings of the ad hoc open-ended informal working group on the conservation and sustainable use of marine biological diversity beyond areas of national jurisdiction, co-chaired by Sri Lanka and the Netherlands. The meetings will determine the feasibility of launching negotiations for a treaty on this very important topic. Mr. President, the Philippines, with a full quarter of the world's total population of seafarers, is fully committed to maritime safety and security and to the fight against piracy. The 2010 Manila Amendments to the International Convention on Standards of Training, Certification and Watchkeeping for Seafarers, referenced in paragraph 88 of the resolution, is consistent with our commitment. Philippines also supports the acceleration of the work of the 3 bodies created by UNCLOS, namely the Commission on the Limits of the Continental Shelf, the International Seabed Authority, which will commemorate its 20th session in Kingston next year, and the International Tribunal for the Law of the Sea, which last year delivered its first ever maritime delimitation judgment in the case between Bangladesh and Myanmar. Turning briefly to the Sustainable Fisheries Resolution, I would like to recall our global commitment in Rio One, to eliminate illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing. Two, to eliminate subsidies that contribute to such fishing and overcapacity. And three, to enhance actions to protect vulnerable marine ecosystems from significant adverse impacts, including through the effective use of impact assessments. These commitments carry over into our present resolution. In addition, the resolution deals with many other critical issues, such as ensuring that the decisions taken by regional fisheries management organizations are based on the best available scientific information, the implementation of plans of action for the conservation and management of sharks, and the impact of industrial fishing on species low down on the food chain, given their important role as food for other species in the marine ecosystem. In this regard, the Philippines welcomes the selection of the topic, the role of seafoods in global food security, for the 15th open-ended informal consultative process on oceans and the law of the sea next year. In closing, Mr. President, we reiterate the call on all states that have not yet done so to ratify UNCLOS and contribute to its universality. UNCLOS stands the test of time, anchoring the rule of law governing the rights and responsibilities of nations, big as well as small, rich or poor, coastal and landlocked, in their use of the world's oceans. Its rules-based approach is also the way forward in addressing maritime disputes. We renew our call on those involved to avail themselves of the dispute settlement mechanism in UNCLOS, even as we ask them to sustain the dialogue and continue exploring opportunities for cooperation to fulfill our shared aspirations. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the distinguished Deputy Permanent Rep of the Philippines, and let me give the floor now to the distinguished representative of El Salvador.
Señor Presidente, permítame en nombre del Gobierno de la República de El Salvador saludarlo y felicitarlo por la organización de este debate sobre el tema 76 de la agenda, los océanos y el derecho del mar. Y a través suyo aprovecho para agradecer los reportes provistos por el señor Secretario General a Plica 68, Plica 71 y su adendum, así como los reportes sobre los trabajos del Grupo de Trabajo Ad Hoc y sobre el proceso consultativo informal de composición abierta. Permítame, señor Presidente, en el contexto de este debate, hablar ante la Asamblea General de Naciones Unidas sobre la temática del Golfo de Fonseca. El Gobierno de la República de El Salvador respetuosamente desea recordar a la comunidad internacional la propuesta del Presidente de El Salvador en su discurso ante la Asamblea General de las Naciones Unidas el 26 de septiembre de 2007, para establecer un régimen de desarrollo integral y sostenible con la participación y consentimiento de las tres repúblicas ribereñas. Como consecuencia de esta propuesta, se suscribió el 4 de octubre de 2007 la Declaración de Managua, Golfo de Fonseca, una zona de paz, desarrollo sostenible y seguridad, que fue ratificada por los señores presidentes de El Salvador, Honduras y Nicaragua el 30 de marzo de 2012. Adicionalmente, los señores presidentes, en su declaración conjunta de 4 de diciembre de 2012, acordaron constituir una comisión trinacional con la finalidad de mantener el Golfo de Fonseca como una zona de paz, desarrollo sostenible y seguridad, la que será presidida por los cancilleres de los respectivos países, manifestando ante la comunidad internacional que todos los temas relativos al Golfo de Fonseca serán abordados por la comisión trinacional que ha sido creada. De esta manera se ha contribuido una vez más con la vigencia efectiva de los propósitos y principios de la Carta de la Organización de las Naciones Unidas, ONU, y de la Organización de los Estados Americanos, OEA, en cuanto al mantenimiento de la paz y la seguridad internacional. Señor Presidente, en cuanto a la condición jurídica internacional del Golfo de Fonseca, este ha sido considerado como un golfo desde tiempo inmemorial, tal como ha sido establecido en los documentos coloniales y en las reales cédulas emitidas por la Corona de España desde 1522. Con esta denominación de Golfo de Fonseca, ha sido identificado en diversos instrumentos internacionales, tales como A. la sentencia de la Corte Internacional de la Corte de Justicia Centroamericana de 9 de marzo de 1907. B. el Tratado General de Paz suscrito por El Salvador y Honduras el 30 de octubre de 1980. C. el compromiso celebrado entre El Salvador y Honduras de 24 de mayo de 1986 para someter el diferendo limítrofe entre ambos estados a la instancia de la Corte Internacional de Justicia, de la Declaración de Managua de 4 de octubre de 2007 y E, el Acuerdo Presidencial de la Unión de 2 de abril de 2008, entre otros, por lo que el término correcto a ser utilizado es el de Golfo de Fonseca. El Salvador, tal como lo manifestara en su nota de 11 de noviembre del presente año, dirigida al señor Secretario General de las Naciones Unidas y puesta a disposición de esta Asamblea General bajo la sigla APLICA 68-581 y al Secretario General de la Organización de los Estados Americanos, es un país respetuoso de sus obligaciones internacionales y siempre ha abogado por el cumplimiento integral correspondiente de la sentencia emitida por la Corte Internacional de Justicia de 11 de septiembre de 1992 en los términos que expresa dicho fallo, el cual establece que para su cumplimiento en la parte marítima debe haber un acuerdo basado en el derecho internacional llevado a cabo por las repúblicas de El Salvador, Honduras y Nicaragua. Señor Presidente, como he mencionado, ya existe actualmente entre las repúblicas de El Salvador, Honduras y Nicaragua la Comisión Trinacional, en donde se discuten las siguientes áreas temáticas. 1. Protección del medio ambiente y de especies marinas, costeras y terrestres. B. Fomento de desarrollo turístico sostenible, comunitario y social. 3. Desarrollo económico y social de la zona. 4. Fortalecimiento de las municipalidades en los tres países. 5. Desarrollo de infraestructura y portuario. 6. Defensa y seguridad. Como producto de las discusiones en el seno de esta Comisión Trinacional, se trabaja en borradores de instrumentos y convenios marcos de cooperación en las áreas de mejoramiento del medio ambiente, desarrollo sostenible y protección de las especies marinas en las aguas del Golfo de Fonseca, desarrollo turístico, desarrollo portuario, defensa y seguridad, para darle cumplimiento a la Declaración de Managua de 4 de octubre de 2007, así como en un futuro al reglamento del Grupo de Trabajo Declaración de Managua, Golfo de Fonseca, una zona de paz, desarrollo sostenible y seguridad. Siguiendo el espíritu de la Declaración de Managua, en la que concebimos al Golfo de Fonseca como una zona de paz, desarrollo sostenible y seguridad, se proponen distintas acciones y proyectos que pretenden aprovechar bajo un enfoque trinacional, el potencial de la zona para la preservación del ecosistema, para el desarrollo del turismo a nivel regional e internacional, para la investigación científica y la explotación sostenible de los recursos vivos en el Golfo. Asimismo, se buscará bajo esta visión garantizar la seguridad de las comunidades que habitan y trabajan en esta área. Señor Presidente, en este marco, se trabaja también en propuestas para el desarrollo económico del Golfo de Fonseca a través de proyectos como el establecimiento de un ferry, de un astillero y de futuras zonas de libres de impuestos en los puntos de abordaje y destino de los tres países. También en el área de conservación del medio ambiente se busca establecer un museo marino y de un centro trinacional de investigación marina que reúna a expertos de los tres países con el fin de promover la investigación y conservación del ecosistema de la zona y forme estudiantes provenientes de las tres naciones. Esperamos que un adecuado manejo de esta zona podría llevar eventualmente a presentar al Golfo de Fonseca como una zona protegida Ramsar o como candidato a la declaración de reserva de la biosfera por parte del UNESCO, que reconocen como tal a espacios caracterizados precisamente por la conservación y protección de la biodiversidad, el desarrollo económico y humano en estas zonas, la investigación, la educación y el intercambio de información entre las diferentes reservas a nivel mundial. Señor presidente, El Salvador actualmente tiene una percepción nueva sobre la importancia del derecho del mar, de los océanos, de la conferencia Río más 20, así como de los beneficios que brinda a los países la Convención de las Naciones Unidas sobre el Derecho del Mar, razón por la cual se están estudiando todos estos elementos para tomar decisiones sobre nuestra visión oceánica. Permítame finalmente, señor presidente, hacer una invitación a nuestro evento paralelo titulado Golfo de Fonseca, retos y oportunidades para el desarrollo sostenible, que se realizará en la Sala C el día 11 de diciembre a la 1:15 p.m. y donde esperamos seguir abordando y discutiendo con todos ustedes sobre este tema de tanta importancia para mi país y para mi región. Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
I thank the distinguished representative of El Salvador. We have heard the last speaker in the debate for this morning. We shall continue the debate this afternoon at 3 p.m. in this hall, and the meeting is adjourned.